From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And the Chosen Braun digs in. In fact, he kicks away smartly. And the Chosen Braun clear by 3.5 suddenly. Big story, Warren's Candyman battling out the Miners, but a good-looking debut for the Chosen Braun, giving John Velasquez 2 on the afternoon. They rock almost 7 lengths.
Here's Smiley Sabatka, narrow lead into the final furlong. And Smiley Sabatka still challenged by Windcracker to the inside. They've opened up by 6, back to Business Model in third, Anti-Gravity fourth. Smiley Sabatka, Joe Talamo kicking clear in the closing strides to win it.
They're coming down to the quarter pole. Capo Kane, he's been there from the start. Dylan Davis took a peek back to see that Swill's under a ride. Eagle Orb is coming 3 wide as the field makes their way down to the 8th pole. It's still Capo Kane. He's trying to take him gate to wire in the Jerome, and he's opened up a 2-length lead now. Capo Kane, he wanders to the middle of the track past the 16th pole, but he's 3 lengths in front of Eagle Orb and comes down to the line. A 5-length winner of the Jerome, Capo Kane.
I wasn't worried about going into the Jerome going a mile because I know he's got a lot of tactical speed, and I know he's bred to go long 2 turns, obviously, but I knew he's got a lot of tactical speed, and I wasn't too bothered about it. And the mile and eighth, I think, was suiting real good.
Welcome to the Equine Forum. Now, here's Mike Penna.
84 days, 9 hours, 43 minutes, and 28 seconds away from the first Saturday in May and the Run for the Roses. Later today, the connections of 28 three-year-olds entered into 3 Derby points races on this Saturday afternoon will all be hoping to find themselves one step closer to smelling the roses on that first Saturday in May. Good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to another jam-packed edition of the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you as always, embarking upon another 3-hour tour this morning as I take you all the way up to 11 a.m. Eastern on the show that launched this network. And, you know, the road to the 2021 Kentucky Derby officially began on September 5th of last year when the Dale Romans-trained Sittin' on Go announced his presence with a 2.5-length score in the Grade 3 Iroquois at Churchill Downs, earning 10 points toward a spot in that Derby starting gate. Well, since that day, 21 Kentucky Derby points races have been contested. Believe it or not, 21 Kentucky Derby points races already in the books. And the early leaderboard is topped with some serious quality. And, of course, you know I'm talking about 2-year-old champion Essential Quality. The current top 5 also includes a few others you will definitely want to keep in mind. Like, of course, number 2 ranked Keep Me In Mind, from the barn of trainer Robertino Diodoro. And if you're a Derby regular, like Hall of Fame trainer Steve Asmussen, you're probably just kicking back with a little midnight bourbon to celebrate his place at number 3 on the points list. While 6-time Derby winner Bob Baffert is once again channeling his inner Medina spirit and no doubt spending a lot of time with Spielberg, watching Raiders of the Lost Ark, Jaws, E.T., and Schindler's List as he tries to avoid any close encounters while preparing to add another chapter to his own West Side Story. Yeah, I had to have a little fun with the top 5 this morning. Those two, of course, Medina Spirit and Spielberg, holding down the 4th and 5th place positions, respectively, on the points list. And if you think Bob Baffert is loaded for bear, what would you give to be in the position that owner Saul Kooman is in? Saul is part owner, well, in a lot of horses, but in 3 of the current top 20 horses in the Derby ranking: Spielberg, Cowan, and Tarantino. He is also involved with Freedom Fighter, who is co-second choice at 5-2 in today's San Vicente at Santa Anita. And oh, by the way, he owned part of recently crowned Horse of the Year Authentic. So life is good if you're Saul Kooman. But this is certainly nothing new for him. And he's going to be with me coming up at 8:35 Eastern. And I'm going to ask Saul, what's the secret? Other than, of course, having some seriously deep pockets to invest in all these different horses. But that doesn't always guarantee you
that you're going to find yourself invested in the right horse. But he's done it repeatedly. And I'm sure he would be the first to tell you, and he might do that when I have him on the show in a few minutes, that there have been plenty of investments he would like to have back where he didn't make the right call. We always hear about the horses that succeed, but I'm sure there have been several that he would tell you, maybe it wasn't the greatest move. But for the most part, Saul Kumin has had a tremendous amount of success in this sport, and he has given back a lot to this sport. And I'm going to visit with him at 8:35. Can't wait for that interview. Byron King from Bloodhorse publishes his Derby Dozen each week, and he will be here at 9 o'clock Eastern time to share his thoughts on the Derby picture and preview each of today's three Derby points races. One of those is, of course, the Grade 3 Sam F. Davis at Tampa Bay Downs, where Dale Romans will send out the morning line favorite, Smiley Sabatka. But for trainer Cheryl Weinbaugh and her husband Ken, their talented Florida-bred Boca Boy could provide them with a career-changing moment as they go in search of their very first graded stakes victory, just a little more than 13 months after Ken suffered a stroke, which initially resulted in paralysis, partial paralysis, on his left side. It's a great story, and Ken will be here to tell it to you at 9:25 Eastern time. In addition, I'm going to bring you several special segments, which have become staples on this program week in and week out, including today's First Bet, which is brought to you by First Bet, a horse you might want to keep an eye on later today. Our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris, Unsung Heroes, returns this week. That's all brought to you by Claiborne. Calling All Three-Year-Olds, presented by Spendthrift, and In the Room with Sean Clancy, a one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation this week with journeyman rider Trevor McCarthy, and you won't want to miss that. That comes your way at 10 o'clock Eastern, and right around 10:20, 10:25, I'll bring you Kurt Beckard's Stroll Through Racing History, and that's a fantastic story today. Don't forget your chance to be part of the show. That comes up at 10:40 Eastern time when I open the phone lines for a brand new weekly call-in segment. Looking forward to taking your calls. So many of you will no doubt want to share your thoughts on today's Derby prep races and major stakes, and that's wonderful. We will do that. But I'm also sure that there will be plenty of you who will want to call in to share some thoughts on three-time Breeders' Cup winning trainer Julio Canani, who passed away yesterday at the age of 83. In Pasadena, California. There have been so many wonderful tributes and remembrances on social media that I've seen over the past 24 hours or so, and I welcome your calls to remember Julio toward the end of the show. I'll open up the phone lines, 10:40 Eastern, and looking forward to that segment very, very much this morning. When I come back, though, I'm going to kick off this very busy program with Debbie Easter, who is the executive director of the Virginia Thoroughbred Association. She's going to tell you all about their upcoming stallion auction, which benefits not only the Virginia thoroughbred industry, but several great causes. That's next on the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Pin Oak Stud's Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
Hi, this is Joe Nicholson. During these difficult times, the team at Nicholson Insurance Agency sends best wishes to all for good health. We can all look forward to better times ahead when this pandemic is behind us. But in the meantime, we need to stay safe. Although the staff at Nicholson Insurance is working from home, phone calls into the office are forwarded so that service remains intact. Customer service professionals continue to be ready, willing, and able to help you with your insurance needs, whether it be equine, farm, home, auto, business, or life. Several of Nicholson Insurance Agency's companies are returning portions of auto premiums because of reduced travel during the isolation period, which I think is the right thing to do. Please call 859-224-7080, Nicholson Insurance Agency. Thank you.
The Virginia Stallion Auction returns Wednesday, February 10th with open bidding on every season. The impressive list of quality seasons includes Ghost Sapper, Gunrunner, Liam's Map, Malibu Moon, More Than Ready, Midnight Loot, Union Rags, and many more. Plus seasons to horses who are full or close to full at the farm, such as Complexity, Not This Time, Omaha Beach, and Volatile. No guarantee seasons are a great way to save money on your stud fees. So mark your calendar. The Virginia Stallion Auction, Wednesday, February 10th, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern. Learn more at VABred.org.
Yo, guys, they call me Jersey Joe, but it's only Joe Bravo. Call me whatever you like. Just so happy that you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
Arrowgate's going to take the far outside route. He's coming up on the outside of Gunavera, but he's a long way behind Gunrunner and Collected as they make their way to the top of the stretch in the Breeders' Cup Classic. They're into the stretch, and it's Collected and Gunrunner. They've been battling since the gates opened. Gunrunner's got the lead. Collected West Coast is bearing down on them on the outside. Final 16th. Gunrunner reaching for the wire. Collected's alongside, and then comes West Coast and War Story. But Gunrunner's on top of the world. He wins the Breeders' Cup Classic over Collected. Then came West Coast, followed by War Story. Arrowgate was coming late, but too late. The final time was 2:01.29.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you. 3 hours on this Saturday morning, all the way up until 11 a.m. Eastern. That was Larry Colmus with the call of the 2017 Breeders' Cup Classic, a huge win for eventual Horse of the Year Gunrunner, who retired with 12 wins from 19 starts and nearly, how about this, $16 million in purse earnings. And he is among the stallions included in this year's Virginia Stallion Auction, and I'm going to visit with Executive Director of the Virginia Thoroughbred Association, Debbie Easter, coming up momentarily. But before I bring in Debbie, I got so excited in the opening segment talking about all the Derby prep races and all the different angles, and then, of course, reflecting for just a moment on Julio Canani and hoping that many of you will call in to remember Julio toward the end of the program when I open the phone lines around 10:40 Eastern time. I forgot to throw out the poll question for today. The question of the day, which I thought it would be fun to tie in to the Super Bowl tomorrow. So today's question of the day, and you can go to @HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, to share your thoughts. In honor of the battle of the goat versus baby goat, as they're calling it, in the Super Bowl tomorrow, which jockey do you consider to be the greatest of all time? I think we can get a lot of different answers to this one. Which jockey do you consider to be the greatest of all time? You can go to @HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and share your thoughts, and I'll pass those along as we move throughout the program here this morning. Well, Debbie Easter is indeed with me now, and big doings coming up next week, February 10th, the Virginia Stallion Auction. You can bid online. This is going to be pretty special, and you heard me mention the name Gunrunner. So many top horses included in this year's auction, and a couple of special interests benefiting from this, not just the Virginia thoroughbred industry. Debbie, first of all, good morning. Appreciate the time.
Good morning, Mike. I'm just tickled to be on. Thank you.
Yeah, and really excited to hear more about the auction. You know, I mentioned the name Gunrunner, and there are others. Ghost Sapper, Liam's Map, Malibu Moon, More Than Ready, Midnight Loot, Union Rags. I could spend this entire interview just rattling through the litany of top stallions that are included. But I'll leave it to you. The floor is yours. Tell people more about the Virginia Stallion Auction.
Sure. I think we're obviously one of the oldest auctions out there, and our auction goes to benefit our Breeders Fund, and we've had to use it over the years to keep our Breeders Association, to keep our Breeders Association running. But so we're just really excited about the list of stallions we have this year, and it's we try and sell no guarantee seasons, and people hopefully will take advantage of our auction and be able to save a little money when they're breeding their mares this year. But one of the things we're really excited about this year, and I think it just shows the unity that we need to have in this industry. We tend to all get a little regionalized, but we have four seasons for keep to help fund the HHR initiative in your legislature down there in Kentucky. And So we have a complexity season, a gun runner season, a not this time season, and the golden scent season. And we're hoping that people will open up their pocketbooks and do something good that could help what's very important for Kentucky right now and the whole industry down there. And we're happy to help out, and those proceeds will go straight to the initiative. So
it's great.
I think it's something that's good we can do for the industry.
Yeah, it's spectacular, and it's so wonderful to see the Virginia Thoroughbred Organization and the association helping a cause that is so near and dear to the heart of so many Kentuckians. In the horse industry here, this has been a hotly contested topic now for many, many weeks. I had Dale Romans on a few weeks ago to share his thoughts from the horseman perspective and talk about why having historical horse racing machines here in Kentucky is so critical to the racing and, quite frankly, to the breeding industry going forward. And it certainly is. And Debbie, kudos to you and to everybody with the Virginia Stallion Auction and the Virginia Breeders Association for taking the initiative to partner with KEEP, the Kentucky Equine Education Project, and help out any way you can. This is pretty cool.
It's just we can't afford it. We're very lucky. We've learned here in Virginia that working together, different organizations working together gets you further than it does working apart. And we just can't afford, even though it's not Virginia, we can't afford for Kentucky not to be healthy or Maryland not to be healthy. Our industry's not big enough anymore. So the more I think that we all can work together to help each other, it's just a positive for the whole industry.
You mentioned that the Virginia Stallion Auction is quite possibly the oldest stallion auction in the industry. Do you remember the first year that the auction was held?
I can't give you the exact year, but I know I've been doing it a long time. So I know back in the 80s, 70s, we were doing it, and it's taken different turns and twists. But, it's always – we probably don't – it's probably a bake sale compared to what we used to raise for the association, but it's still very important for us to do in order to have our association function every year. I think the fact that we do it the old-fashioned way over the phone, I think that that gives folks a little bit of I think they like reaching out and talking to somebody instead of just bidding over online. I think that stallion owners like it, and that's why we get such a great list. And, we're able to, not 100%, but I would bet 95% of the time, get the donors and the purchasers of seasons together and get a deal done. So I've got a great group of volunteers that helps, and we all have fun, and it makes it nice for the people that are bidding on the seasons also.
Yeah, I love that aspect of picking up the phone, calling, and talking to a human being. I mean, what a novel concept, right? And as you said,
exactly.
So many people really appreciate that they can do it this way. And let me just walk through, and well, maybe, Debbie, it's better if you do it, but the particulars of how it will all work. It begins Wednesday, February 10th. Well, that's the date of the auction, next Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, 10 a.m. Eastern. Take it from there. How does it work?
Sure. So what we do is we – here in the office, we have a big chalkboard with all the stallions on it and a bid for each stallion. So people just call in. They can ask about any stallion they'd like, and we'll give them the bid. And they just, if they'd like to bid further, they just move the bid by at least $100. And so what people want to do that first day on the 10th is they just want to make sure they keep themselves in the top five bidders on any stallion that they're bidding on by the end of the evening. And then what happens the next day, we don't take any more first-time bids. What we do is we take all the horses that have bids, and we get the bidders on the phone the next day, and we auction off the season just like a regular auction. We just have everybody on the phone instead of live. And it ends up doing – it's a lot of fun, and I think the people that are bidding and the people that are here in the office all have a good time with it.
Fantastic. And there is plenty of information available on the Stallion Auction if you go to vabred.org. That's VA Bred, as in Virginia Bred, vabred.org. radio.org. And Debbie, quite often phone numbers don't typically work on radio because people are driving in their cars. We don't want them trying to write down a jot down a phone number as they're driving or they're working in the barns. But I'm going to throw this number out there a couple of times so that if there are people sitting at their desk right now, they can write this number down. The number to call to make your bid and to talk to somebody to make your bid on February 10th, this coming Wednesday, is 434-977-3716. That's 434-977-3716. And, of course, you get to talk to somebody, an actual human being, and you get to make a bid on so many of the top quality runners that are associated with this stallion auction. Where does the work begin, Debbie, in terms of reaching out to farms, asking them if they want to participate? How does all that come together?
Well, I think it's a relationship that's been formed over time. I mean, these poor farm stallion owners are asked for every charity in the world to donate a season, and we've had longstanding relationships with these farms, and I think we do a fairly good job for the buyers and the farms, and so for us, it's just reaching out to the people that we always do, and we've been doing it so long, I actually get quite a few calls before I even get on the phones and start making the calls about here's the seasons that we're going to do and for you this year, so it works out well.
Yeah, it certainly does. And again, Ghost Sapper, Gun Runner, Liam's Map, Malibu Moon, More Than Ready, Midnight Loot, just some of the stallions you'll be able to bid on. You can go to vabred.org to learn more, to see more stallions. Of course, there are some stallions that are full or close to full at the farm already, such as Complexity and Not This Time and Omaha Beach and Volatile. Those are included. And then the four that are included to help the initiative here in Kentucky with historical horse racing, Not This Time, Gunrunner, Complexity, Golden Sense. That is just a spectacular gesture on the part of the Virginia Thoroughbred Association. And on behalf of everybody here in Kentucky, I can certainly thank you, Debbie. And it's going to be wonderful. Wednesday, February 10th, beginning 10 a.m. Eastern. Again, vabred.org is where you can go. Debbie Easter is the executive director of the Virginia Thoroughbred Association. Debbie, I'm going to shift gears on you for just a minute here before I get to our next segment, which is the Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to everybody every week at this time by Lexus of Lexington. The Colonial Downs meet last year, the meet had to be canceled because of the COVID issues. So many people looking forward to that meet returning, including us, because we're going to be there to broadcast the Virginia Derby again this year, and really looking forward to things getting back to some sense of normalcy. What can you tell us? Do you have an update on the Colonial Downs meet?
We're just really excited. We're scheduled for 7 weeks and purses of at least $500,000 a day. And, you know, hopefully it appears that the numbers are starting to go right with the COVID. I can't speculate yet on what's going to happen with spectators, but we're hopeful that we'll have spectators. But, Jill Byrne and John Marshall and Allison DeLuca, they do a great job there at Colonial. And we've got the stake schedule almost finished up. And I know Allison in the next couple of weeks will be working on the condition book and hope to get that out. But I think it's just going to be a lot of exciting racing and really good purses. And we're lucky that the HHR revenues here are starting to kick in, and we hope we can keep expanding and keep raising the purses. It's exciting here in Virginia right now.
Yeah, it certainly is. You know, I don't know if you know this, but Allison DeLuca, who is the racing secretary there at Colonial Downs, Allison and I worked together before I started on radio when I was working at Keeneland. And I was in Horse ID at Keeneland, and Allison was, of course, part of that racing office team.
She's awesome, and we're awful lucky to have somebody of her experience, and I think she's very well respected by horsemen. And it's a little tough here at Colonial because it's a little unique how we sneak in there, and we have all these other racetracks running at the same time. So she has a difficult job here. Where Tampa, she's one of three tracks running on the eastern part of the United States that are in the sunshine, but here it's a little more difficult. So she's feeling her way around it, but we're just tickled to have her, and she does a great job.
Yeah, she's fantastic. You'd be hard-pressed to find a better fit for Colonial Downs and for the racing office as a racing secretary than Allison DeLuca. She's spectacular. Debbie Easter, Executive Director of the Virginia Thoroughbred Association. Debbie, really appreciate the visit here this morning. All the best with that auction coming up on Wednesday, February 10th. It begins at 10 a.m. And, again, we'll continue to tell people to head over to vabred.org to learn more about the stallion auction and all the benefits associated with it. Really appreciate it, Debbie. Good luck.
Thank you, Mike. And let's have folks just open up their pockets and let's help out the KEEP organization and what's happening in Kentucky. And if anybody would like to donate a season prior to the auction to help out KEEP again, we're open-minded and we'll try and get it done.
Wonderful. Debbie, appreciate the visit. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mike. Bye-bye.
All right. Debbie Easter here on HRRN. Yeah, fantastic. I mean, this is an industry that so often, and I think rightfully so, gets a bad rap. Well, it gets maybe sometimes the correct rap of being fragmented and fighting against itself and can't get out of its own way because people are looking out for their own interests. Well, here you go. Here's a wonderful example of one state industry working to help another state industry, and it is fantastic. Again, those four stallions that benefit the historical horse racing initiative here in Kentucky, Not This Time, Gunrunner, Complexity, and Golden Sense. How about those four? It's not like they're throwing a stallion at you that you'd never heard of, right? I mean, we were talking about Horse of the Year, Gunrunner. You know, Breeders' Cup winner, Golden Sense. I mean, come on. Fantastic. Great job, Debbie Easter. Great job to everybody who put that together, and it all comes your way next Wednesday. All right, it is time for your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by Lexus of Lexington. When I come back, I will tell you about a horse you might want to take a look at as your first bet of the day to kick off the Rainbow Six sequence at Santa Anita. That's ahead after your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
The story of this great thoroughbred might easily fit the needed scenario for a five-star bit of Hollywood magic. All the necessary ingredients are indeed there. In the summer of 1940, because of protracted German bombing of the British Isles, the British Bloodstock Agency offered for sale five stallions to American interests. Mr. C.B. Whitney purchased one who had won the Epsom Derby in record time. The contemporaries of the time cast a rather jaundiced eye, so to speak, on the purchase, and that the horse was considered to be essentially a sprinter with little consequent, at least apparently, chance of upgrading American breeding strains. The fact is, the 7-year-old gray very nearly never made it to America at all. Now, that in itself is a fascinating story which bears retelling. He was transported to America by ship, or at least was supposed to be, and accordingly installed in a crate and hoisted aboard a vessel which was part of a convoy headed across the Atlantic. Soon after sailing, the captain of the freighter discovered the horse's bill of lading, and, as this manifest forbade him from taking on livestock, the horse was returned to the dock. That, as it turned out, was a providential stroke of good fortune. You see, that particular vessel was torpedoed by a German U-boat and went to a watery grave at the bottom of the briny deep with nary a trace of a survivor. A subsequent freighter brought the equine specimen to American shores. At the New York dock assignated as the debarkation point, there was no horse unloading equipment, so it was decided to take him off the ship via a long and treacherously steep passenger gangplank. While he stood at the top, pensively surveying the scene and waited, filled with curiosity, steadfastly refusing debarkation. Straw was used to line the gangplank, and he was fed hay, all to no avail. Eventually, he was enticed down with sugar. Curiously enough, many of this stallion's get demonstrated that self-same temperament which was displayed at the New York dock in that year of 1940. When one of our subject stallion's daughters' first flight with a crafty veteran reinsman Hetty Eddie Arcaro in the irons came out onto the racetrack for the 1946 Futurity, she stopped for an extended time in front of the stands, not acting up, mind you, just looking up and down the track until her curiosity was fully satisfied. She then went calmly, quietly and professionally to the starting gate and promptly galloped off to an impressive score over the very best colts the East could offer by way of opposition. In the breeding shed, this stud was awesome, and the reason was really quite simple. He had five characteristics that were of paramount importance in passing on to new foals: soundness, speed, conformation, fertility, and something that cannot be seen or measured, his natural intelligence and temperament, which made his progeny very easy to handle. He was, in his prime in the breeding shed, the unequivocal, undisputedly foremost broodmare sire in the world. All told, he begat 68 stakes winners and was North America's leading sire in 1946, and he was a leading sire for 14 straight years. That marvelous gray stallion knew and appreciated human affection and yet did not exploit it. He was never too busy to stroll to his paddock fence for an endearing pat. He was kind, gentle, and uncomplicated. His nickname was Toby, but this great stallion, whose name is indelibly etched in the now yellowing pages of American racing history, was Mahmood.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at Lexus of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes every fall. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
An undefeated graded stakes winner on the track, Algorithms has sired over 70% winners from starters. His top runners include Pennsylvania Derby winner Math Wizard, graded stakes winner Recruiting Ready, juvenile stakes winner and multiple graded stakes placed South Bend. And these recent stakes winners and stakes performers.
To get there, but Kanani will win it.
Algorithms, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Racing fans, with the possibility of a $5 million pool, there is a mandatory payout in Saturday's 20-cent Rainbow Pick 6 jackpot at Santa Anita. That's right, today's total Rainbow Pick 6 jackpot could approach $5 million, and there will be a mandatory payout. Saturday's Rainbow 6 is comprised of races 5 through 10, with average field size at 10 horses per race. Approximate post time for race 5 on Saturday is at 2:08 Pacific. Don't forget, you can watch and wager at First Bet. That's First.com/bet, and please note, we will have special early first post times on both Saturday and Sunday. First post time on Saturday is at 12 noon with four graded stakes included. On Big Game Sunday, first post time for an 8-race card is at 11 a.m. Track announcer Frank Miramati and Tom Quigley will handicap Saturday's card beginning at 10:50, and on Big Game Sunday, their handicapping seminar begins at 9:50 a.m. at santaanita.com.
The Virginia Stallion Auction returns Wednesday, February 10th, with open bidding on every season. The impressive list of quality seasons includes Ghost Sapper, Gunrunner, Liam's Map, Malibu Moon, More Than Ready, Midnight Loot, Union Rags, and many more. Plus seasons to horses who are full or close to full at the farm, such as Complexity, Not This Time, Omaha Beach, and Volatile. No guarantee seasons are a great way to save money on your stud fees, so mark your calendar. The Virginia Stallion Auction, Wednesday, February 10th, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern. Learn more at VABred.org.
Hi, this is Shug McGahee, and I really enjoy listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Dixie's Two Stents on the outside running in second. Petruccio follows them in third. Anti-Gravity is fourth. Vittorio has made steady progress, was last, now up into fifth, and four wide and gaining ground at the top of the stretch. Freedom Fighter the leader. On the outside is Dixie's Two Stents. These two side by side. Freedom Fighter digs in. Dixie's Two Stents on the outside runs at him. Freedom Fighter, Dixie's Two Stents. Who's it going to be? The two of them down to the wire together, and Freedom Fighter got there. Dixie's Two Stents was second, then Petruccio and Y-Fire.
Welcome back. The Equine Forum continuing all the way up to 11 a.m. Eastern. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch. That was the voice of Larry Colmus. Freedom Fighter, with his maiden win at Del Mar on August 1st of last year. He is back in action later today for Hall of Famer Bob Baffert, as Bob goes in search of an 11th win in the San Vicente. Freedom Fighter, a couple of horses sent to the post by Bob in that race today. He has the field surrounded, really. Great chance to win number 11, as you might expect. But Freedom Fighter, owned in part by Saul Kuhman, who is my special guest coming up in just a couple of moments, right after we take a look at, well, at least in some respects, a way to help you pick a winner. This is a cool segment. And it's presented by our friends at First Bet. Today, the first leg of a mandatory Rainbow Six payout, which the pool is expected to reach $5 million. Maybe today's First Bet provides you with a single. Here it is, presented by First Bet.
And now, today's First Bet.
Today's First Bet comes from race 5 at Santa Anita, which is a maiden claiming event on the main track with a post time of 5:08 Eastern. Number 1, Smooth Like Butter. 7-2 on the morning line. She has a 33% First Bet win projection, rates 20 points higher than the next closest win contender, and is top ranked in 22 First Bet factors in this race, including 5 of the 7 most important. She drops from a maiden special weight in for a tag for the first time, switches to elite rider Joel Rosario, and will be adding Lasix for the first time. Today's First Bet is number 1, Smooth Like Butter, in race 5 at Santa Anita. I'll be back right after this word from First Bet.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number 1, st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
All right, well, maybe that does give you a single in race 5 at Santa Anita today. The First Bet segment, again, presented by our friends at First Bet. Maybe you single Freedom Fighter in the San Vicente. I know that would be okay with owner Saul Kuhman, who is involved with Freedom Fighter along with other partners. Saul is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Saul, good morning. Appreciate the visit, my friend.
Oh, thanks for having me, buddy. Good morning. Hope everything's good. It's cold.
Yeah, always great to catch up. You know, it was funny when I texted you yesterday and I said, would you mind joining me on the show for a few minutes? And you said 8:35 a.m. as if you were asking me, you know, a.m. or, you know, that's kind of early. And my wife pointed out the fact that you have 3 kids, so you're going to be up anyway. So
I'm sitting in a parking lot outside my daughter's lacrosse game with an iPad on my lap watching the game. They won't let you in, but they have a camera in there. So if you hear a, then it's mostly because I got the iPad on my lap watching the game. They're winning by a lot, so it's good. But
well,
we left at 6:45.
Can't tell you how much I appreciate you stepping away from your daughter's lacrosse game. You know you've made it when Saul Kuhman steps out from his daughter's lacrosse game to do an interview. Saul, really appreciate it. I won't keep you long. I'll let you get back to the game. But let's start with this. I mentioned at the top of the show that you are involved with 3 horses that are currently in the top 20 rankings for the Derby point schedule. You have Spielberg, Cowan, Tarantino, and now, of course, Freedom Fighter, who looks to find his way into the points after that maiden win last August at Del Mar. What's the secret? How does Saul Kuhman keep coming up with all these good horses?
Well, listen, we have a lot of horses. And we've got, you know, really good people that pick them out for us. And, you know, we've got a process and we've been sticking with it. You know, we've obviously had a good run and been pretty lucky. So we're just hoping that can continue. You know, we'll see. I mean, we'll see. It feels early. It actually, in a weird way, sometimes it feels a little bit light this year as far as, you know, feeling good about going into the next couple of months. But, you know, we've been here before, and sometimes things pop up that you're not expecting, and then sometimes horses disappoint you. So it kind of goes both ways, but we're really looking forward to an exciting time of year.
You know, I said that you always hear about the horses that succeed, right? And by the way, congratulations on being involved with Horse of the Year Authentic last year, too. What a run he took you on, huh?
Oh, amazing. Amazing. The Breeders' Cup was incredible. I mean, that was an unbelievable win, and what an incredible horse. I mean, to do what he did last year, you know, just not sure he'd be able to stretch out the way he did, and he did. He was a really an unbelievable horse to be part of.
Yeah, special, and a special year for owner Saul Kuhman and the team associated with Horse of the Year Authentic. But I say, Saul, that you always hear about the horses that succeed, but I'm sure there are plenty of times where you invest in a horse and it just doesn't pan out. And I think that's important for prospective new owners to understand that, hey, it's not always roses, right?
Oh, no. You miss a lot, I mean, to find the good ones. And it really depends on what your strategy is. I mean, if you're buying unproven horses, so, you know, yearlings and two-year-olds that you're buying from sales haven't run, you know, you're going to miss a lot. You're going to miss on a much higher percentage than you would, you know, if you're buying horses that are proven. So, you know, when we were lucky enough to buy into horses like Justify, you know, they had already run, and, you know, our probability for success is going to be higher. When you're buying horses, you know, like Authentic, you know, you take that group. We bought, I think it was 17 or 18 horses in that group. We ended up with three tremendous horses with Authentic, Charlatan, and Eight Rings, and then a lot of horses that couldn't run. And those were, you know, those were high ticket items. So it's hard. When you get a good one, you got to enjoy it. But, you know, my advice to people is always spread it out. I mean, you know, I'd rather own, you know, 25% of four horses than 100% of one, because you have four shots. And it just makes it a lot more fun.
You mentioned the team, and it's certainly not just you. Yes, you're the one that is funding the operation, but you have a team that helps you to get involved with these horses and hopefully in the right spots. What is the process like, Saul? When you start looking to get involved with a potential runner, how does the process work?
Well, we sort of break our buying into a couple different categories, right? The first one is buying of unproven horses, and we've got, you know, three groups or three people that buy for us. You know, the first is Liz Crow, who buys a group, and she tends to focus on fillies for us, and then we've got Donato Lani, and he's starting to do more stuff with us, and he, you know, bought all the Authentic and Charlatan and this whole group here, and he's, you know, obviously incredibly talented, and another gentleman named Gatewood Bell that buys kind of a mix of stuff with us. So, you know, and that's in the U.S., and that's babies, and then, you know, we have a, you know, different groups and people in Europe, Nicholas and Hubert, that buy, you know, horses coming from Europe for us, and, you know, in the U.S. we use a bunch of people. So, you know, it took us, this is our sixth year, it took us a while to kind of get to the group that we feel comfortable with, we trust, we think we have them focused on things that they're really good at. And then they do most of the heavy lifting. You know, with the unproven horses, you know, we have nothing to do with it. I mean, we pick the person who's going to buy them and set the budget, and that's it. They, you know, they tell us when they've signed the ticket. So we're not involved in that. We kind of know what we're good at and know what we're not good at.
Talking with owner Saul Kuhman here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. All right, now that we've given away all the trade secrets, Saul, let's talk about the actual horses, the three-year-olds that you're involved with. And let's start with the horse running today, Freedom Fighter. Gutsy win in that maiden-breaking victory at Del Mar in August. You have a great relationship with trainer Bob Baffert, and he breaks from the rail today in the San Vicente. What can you tell me about Freedom Fighter?
Yeah, I mean, his wins, maiden win was terrific. I think it was almost even an upside surprise how well he ran first time. You know, he's been training well. He's training with some good horses. The race is pretty tough. There's a couple of very good ones in there. And he's obviously, you know, off a layoff. So, look, I expect him to run well today, but, you know, there's actually another horse at Santa Anita called Bezos that's going to run in a maiden race that, you know, I think there's been a bunch of hype around that I think we're, you know, as if not more excited to see that horse run today than Freedom Fighter. But we'll see how they both do. It's great to have 2 3-year-olds out there today, you know, and get a chance to watch them both run.
Yeah, a little disappointed last week with Spielberg, but he sits in number 5, in the number 5 position on the Derby points list right now. Tell me a little bit more about Spielberg.
Yeah, he's a tricky one. You know, I think he trains well. he is obviously extremely well bred and will have no problem with the distance. He kind of, when you think he's going to run well, he disappoints you a little bit. When you start doubting him, he does what he did two races back, which was win a stake. So I can't quite get a beat on him yet, to be honest. I think he's got a ton of talent. It's just a question of, will a light go on and will he be able to perform on a big day? But he's, he'll get another shot. And obviously the last one was a little bit disappointing. But a horse with a lot of talent. So hopefully he'll be able to kind of get it all going.
Well, of course, those horses trained by Bob Baffert. You're associated with another Hall of Fame trainer in Steve Asmussen with a horse by name of Cowan, who currently is in the 15th position. So if the Derby was run today, Cowan would be into the field. Tell people about Cowan.
Cowan is an interesting horse. I mean, he might be better on the turf than the dirt. He ran second in the Breeders' Cup 2-year-old turf race to a really, really good Wesley Ward horse. I thought he ran a hell of a race that day. He obviously can run on the dirt as well, and my guess is he'll continue to run on the dirt, and we'll see where it takes us. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him on the turf in the back half of the year. There's not a lot of great turf stuff for 3-year-old colts early in the year, and it kind of opens up as you get in the back half. So I would expect his next start to be on dirt, and we'll see how he does and where it takes us. But my personal opinion, and obviously Steve knows much better than me, is that he will end up being a better turf horse than dirt horse.
And a solid runner-up effort from Tarantino in the Holy Bull Stakes behind Shug McGahee's horse last weekend at Gulfstream. Tell me about Tarantino.
This horse I like a lot. I think he is actually getting better. He's another horse that I think can run on the turf as well. And we weren't sure what his best surface would be. But the last race was actually, when I watched a replay a few times, was really impressive. Kind of kept going. He got beat by a very good horse. But he's getting better. I think he's one to keep your eye on. Again, very well bred. I think we'll have no problem getting the distance. And actually, getting better at the right time. So I think of some of the ones we talked about today, he would be one to keep an eye on. I think he's sneaky and getting better.
Final question before I let you get back to the lacrosse game, Saul. Any other 3-year-olds, colts or fillies, that we should keep an eye on as we move down the road to the first Saturday in May?
There's a horse called Excellent Timing. That we bought recently and moved to Chad Brown, 3-year-old dirt colt that, had run well in New York. And he is one that I would keep your eye on. I think he'll pop up in one of these derby preps somewhere, and he's training extremely well with Chad. So that would probably be the colt that's exciting. We had one win with Safi Joseph last week at Gulfstream called Drain the Clock. Obviously the distance was shorter, and I think we'll probably try to stretch him out somewhere. The question is, can he get the distance? Can he stretch? But he's definitely fast. So those would be probably just two other colts to have and keep your eye on as we roll gear forward.
All right, well, 84 days, 8 hours, 56 minutes, and 48 seconds away from the first Saturday in May. So, Saul, good luck getting down that road again. I wish you all the best. And, again, can't thank you enough for stepping away from the lacrosse game. That means a lot, and I owe you. Thanks, buddy.
Oh, my pleasure, buddy. Great to talk to you. Have a great rest of the weekend, and thanks for having me on.
All right, go get them. Saul Kooman here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. That interview, like all of our interviews, brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at embracetherace.com. You talk about somebody that's passionate about this game. How about Saul Kooman? He's so passionate, he leaves his daughter's lacrosse game. Well, sort of. He was watching her on video as he's doing the interview. But that's fantastic. And really, good luck to Saul. Here's a guy that puts his money up, and you heard him say it. He doesn't always pick the right horses. What was the statistic he threw out? Was it 20 that he got involved with, and he ended up with 3 that were really, really good? Now, really good. I mean, you get a horse of the year out of that. Justify, you get a triple crown winner out of that. But I'm sure he's wrong more often than he's right. But right now, it seems like he's right every time. So congratulations to Saul, and my best to him moving forward. When I come back, it's your industry star of the week and still to come, Calling All 3-Year-Olds, presented by Spendthrift. My unsung heroes visit this morning is one that you won't want to miss. That comes up right around 9:40 Eastern time. And in the room with Sean Clancy and, of course, Kurt Becker, stroll through racing history. All of that still ahead on a jam-packed Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Gainsway Stallion Taprit, a $1.2 million yearling at Saratoga. Taprit's victories include the Grade 1 Belmont Stakes.
And they're into the stretch. Irish War Cry turns for home with Taprit trying to run him down in the last furlong. The two of them are now a half length apart. They are clear of Gormley and Patch. It is Irish War Cry. And on the outside, Taprit. Taprit has taken the lead. Taprit and Irish War Cry come down to the line together. It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
In his first 2 years at stud, Taprit has bred over 240 mares. Now his first weanlings have arrived, selling for up to $100,000. One of the best bred sons of Sire Sires Taprit to ever enter stud. Classic winner and stakes record setter Taprit, standing at Gainsway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at tonysteaksandseafood.com.
On the battlefield, there's a saying America's military men and women live by. Never leave a fallen warrior behind, ever. Off the battlefield, Wounded Warrior Project operates with the same goal. We leave no warrior behind. Wounded Warrior Project is a nonprofit organization created to help our men and women returning home with the scars of war. Whether those scars are physical or mental, we're here to make sure that they heal. And whether it's helping those with post-traumatic stress disorder live a normal life again, or giving much-needed support to injured warriors and veterans hospitals. Because no one deserves our help more than the men and women who risk their lives to keep us safe. Wounded Warrior Project. We never leave a fallen warrior behind. Ever. Learn more about what we do at woundedwarriorproject.org.
Thursday evenings, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, is the Briznet.com call-in show. It's your chance to call in and let the Horse Racing Radio Nation know what's on your mind. Call us at 888-966-HRRN and discuss the topics you choose in the world of thoroughbred racing. The Briznet.com call-in show, every Thursday, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, on Sirius 219 and XM 201, or streaming live online at horseracingradio.net.
This is Wesley Ward. I'm the conqueror of Royal Ascot. I listen to HRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Latruska tries to put away Motion of Motion. Motion of Motion comes right back at Latruska, but Latruska finds more on the front end. Latruska, with a less than a quarter mile to go, now kicks for home. Motion of Motion's got to re-rally. Lady Apple is trying to rally outside of Ujjayi, but it's still Latruska up front with an eighth to go. Motion of Motion, Ujjayi is trying very hard. Lady Apple figure it out. Latruska is almost home. She's three lengths clear. Ujjayi in second. Latruska will give Fausto Gutierrez the Grade 3 Houston Ladies Classic. It's all Latruska. Ujjayi there for second. Lady Apple and figure it out in 1 minute 45.02 seconds.
That's Chris Griffin with a call of the Houston Ladies Classic last weekend at Sam Houston. Big win for Latruska, her third Grade 3 victory since coming to the United States after beginning her career in Mexico for trainer Fausto Gutierrez, who is indeed a native of Mexico. Of course, she rattled off a win in the Shuvi at Saratoga last year, then came back with a win in the Rampart at Gulfstream, and now the Houston Ladies Classic. So three Grade 3s for Latruska and Fausto Gutierrez, who is indeed this week's Industry Star of the Week. I spent an hour with Fausto telling his story and talking about his career on our Trainer Talk show, which is presented by Fasig Tipton. That interview is posted on our website at horseracingradio.net. You can go back and listen to the full thing, but you're going to hear a short excerpt from that show coming up momentarily. And that is, of course, brought to you every single week by my friend Stuart Morris, who offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past several years, that include Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, and South Bend, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the very highest levels. Visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the major sales across the country. Well, indeed, Fausto Gutierrez is on a roll. And that big win last week in the Houston Ladies Classic, just one of many that he has experienced since coming to the United States. And he took time to look back on what this ride has been like for him.
I never dream or believe to win that kind of races. Really, I can't believe that moment. First is my first win at Saratoga and a graduate stake, and with a filly, with a horse to come from Mexico. When I start all this situation, if you tell me to in the first months or first year to be established here with horses, I win an stake at Saratoga, really I can't believe. You know, before I was leader trainer in Mexico City in the Hipódromo de las Américas for the last 7-8 years. I have a big operation near 200 horses. And after I decide to move here with some of that horses, even some Mexican breeds and American horses too, I have there. And I change all that near 200 horses for half here, 10, 15, 20, to try to start again in this profession. And all these wins make me absolutely happy, because you know how is this profession, no? First, you need to learn to lose, because it's the normal to happen at the races. So when you have this kind of big wins, it's incredible, it's amazing, and are that feelings to give us to continue with all this. No, I remember when I was kid, I tell you, I don't have any relation with a backside for the racetrack or the stables. My grandfather, he was member for the Mexican Jockey Club. So when I have 5, 6, 7 years old, I checked there to send a magazine, a monthly magazine about what happened at the races. And I like to check all that pictures, read about the histories, about the great horses of the United States. And I remember when sometimes we go to the Mexican Jockey Club because we live at Spain at that time. And this is this medium, no? You know, all these colors, all these actions around the horses to take my attention. And like this, I'm start to growing on. With the time, when I have chance, I go along to the races. I buy my ticket, like you tell, go with some money in the pocket, go to the paddock to watch the horses, to watch the riders, the owners, the trainers. You know, all these medium, even I like how big are the racetracks, and you can sit there and sometimes even see the sky. And this take all my attention, and is something to I never again be separate. And I watch that big races. I'm waiting to buy the racing form or the program for the next day, go to the home and study, and you know, all these dreams. And for me, it was incredible, because with the time, and I start to be part of the other side. You know, when I buy one horse to claim, I tell you before, and after 32 years for my first win, like an owner trainer, I have a sensation to I never work in my life. You know, because all to I do around the horses, I never consider it a job, a work. Because yeah, it's something like a privilege to be around this industry. So I just have to tell thank you to all this industry for all these moments, because it's great.
That's great. It has been great for Fausto Gutierrez. What a nice man. Enjoyed that visit. The full hour posted on our website, horseracingradio.net. He was fantastic. He wrapped up the show by talking about the fact that he was He was so excited to get to Sam Houston with Latruska, he invited his family to come from Mexico on short notice. He said, hop on a plane, get here, because I really think we have a good chance to win this race. His son was with him. I believe he said his son is 13 years old, and his son was a bit awestruck walking into the paddock and seeing other trainers like Hall of Famer Steve Asmussen there. And Fausto looked at him, and he said, yes, that's true. He said, but we're here too, are we not? And I thought it was a great way to respond to his son. And Fausto starting to feel like he belongs in these big spots, but very, very humble and a really nice guy. So head back and check out the entire trainer talk presented by Fasig Tipton. And my thanks to Stuart Morris for that Industry Star of the Week segment and Fausto Gutierrez. All right, hour two kicks off with Byron King from the Blood Horse looking at the entire three-year-old picture as he puts together his Derby Dozen. It includes trainer Ken Weinbaugh talking about Boca Boy in today's Sam F. Davis at Tampa Bay Downs. It is all ahead right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, with this week's HRN Racing Update. Breeders' Cup Juvenile and Eclipse Award-winning two-year-old champion Essential Quality was one of 326 sophomores made eligible for this year's Triple Crown when the early nominations closed last Saturday. $600 nomination fee makes them eligible for the May 1st Kentucky Derby at Churchill Downs, the May 15th Preakness Stakes at Pimlico, and the June 5th Belmont Stakes at Belmont Park. Trainer Todd Fletcher led all trainers with 45 nominees. Godolphin led individual owners with 11, and champion VeeQuist was one of 13 fillies nominated. Late bloomers can be nominated for $6,000 by Monday, March 29th. In two races that offer points on the road to the Kentucky Derby today, impressive maiden winner Risk Taking has been installed as the 5-2 morning line favorite for the Grade 3 Withers at Aqueduct over Capo Kane and Eagle Orb, the first two finishers from the Jerome, while at Tampa Bay Downs, Pasco winner Nova Rags and Kentucky Jockey Club runner-up Smiley Sabatka lead a full field in the Grade 3 Sam F. Davis. That's your HRRN racing update. Now let's send it back to host Mike Penna for Hour 2 of the Equine Forum.
Big weekend, three Derby prep races as we edge closer to the first Saturday in May. We're going to talk about the Derby picture with Byron King momentarily, but welcome back to hour number two. If you missed any portion of the first hour of the program, the first of 3 hours, if you didn't hear the news, this show expanded to 3 hours last Saturday. I now take you all the way through 11 a.m. Eastern. But if you missed any portion, all you have to do is head back to our website and check out the podcast of the program after we finish up. That's all available to you at horseracingradio.net. Three Derby prep races coming up later today. And I told you about the Sam F. Davis down at Tampa Bay Downs. And Ken Weinbaugh, the trainer, assistant trainer to his wife Cheryl, is going to be with me at 9:25 Eastern Time this morning to talk about their Florida-bred Boca Boy trying to pull off a bit of an upset and give them the biggest win of their career. It's a fantastic story. Ken suffered a stroke, which left him partially paralyzed on the left side of his body just about 13 months ago. We'll get an update on his health condition, but he is back working alongside his wife Cheryl, and they're hoping Boca Boy can provide them with a big win later today. Unsung Heroes. My visit with one of the true unsung heroes in our sport comes up right around 9:39 Eastern time. You won't want to miss that. It's presented by Claiborne. In the room with Sean Clancy, a one-on-one jockey-to-jockey visit this week with journeyman Trevor McCarthy. That's at 10 o'clock Eastern. And at 10:30, Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History. Fantastic story later this morning for you, put together by my friend Kurt Becker, who is a colleague of ours here on the network and, of course, the announcer at Keeneland. And then opening up the phone lines with a call-in segment that I launched last week here on the program. Every week you get a chance to call in and share your thoughts on racing. Maybe remember Julio Canani, who passed away yesterday at the age of 83. That segment coming up right around 10:40 Eastern. Quick update on the poll question. You can go to @HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook to let me know your thoughts, but I thought in honor of the Super Bowl, we'd tie it into that. So the battle, as they're billing it, of the goat versus the baby goat tomorrow in the Super Bowl, which jockey do you consider to be the greatest of all time? Who's the goat when it comes to jockeys? And so many of you starting to weigh in. And the Big A, Anthony Stabile, says the only answer to this question is Angel Cordero Jr. You're going to have East Coast, West Coast biases here, no doubt about it. Sandy Hawley gets a vote. I like that. Super nice guy. The kid, Steve Cawthon, Johnny V with a couple of votes, and Lafitte Pinkai. Yeah, that's another one that deserves to be up there. But keep those coming. I'll try to pass along more answers later in the program. Who is the jockey you consider to be the greatest of all time? At HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Well, I told you that Byron King, who is with Blood Horse, puts together his Derby Dozen. He's kind of taken that over from Steve Haskin, who did it for many, many years. And he ranks his top 12 on the road to the Kentucky Derby every week. Byron with me now here on HRRN. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Doing well and excited to talk some three-year-olds. You know, I mentioned this to Saul Kuhnman as he was with me in the last half of the program. 84 days, 8 hours, 39 minutes, and now just 32 seconds away from the first Saturday in May. So it's going to be here before we know it.
Wow. Unbelievable. It's hard to imagine. There's a little dusting of snow still on the ground here in Louisville right now, so that's hard to get through my head.
Yeah, it doesn't, you know, you look out the window and it doesn't look like it, but it's coming. It'll be here, and we'll be sipping on mint juleps, and hopefully everybody can be back together again in some capacity at Churchill Downs in 84 days, or 83 days, I guess it is now. Let's talk about the three-year-old picture, Byron. You still have Essential Quality, the juvenile champion at the top of the list. Looking forward to seeing his return coming up very, very soon. Fire at Will, number two. Take me through the list and tell me which horses you have your eye on.
You got it. Well, as you mentioned, Essential Quality is number one for me, the champion of last year. He's going to try to follow Nyquist and American Pharoah as champions that go on to perhaps win the Kentucky Derby. In recent years, we've seen other champions such as Classic Empire was fourth, Good Magic was second, Game Winner fifth, and Storm the Court was sixth last year. It'll be interesting to see what he can do. He's expected back in the Southwest Stakes, February the 15th at Oaklawn. That should be probably the top three-year-old prep run this year in terms of the qualifications of the horses coming into the race. Also likely for that race, two other horses I have in my top 12. That would be Jackie's Warrior, as well as Keep Me in Mind. Jackie's Warrior, of course, was sensational last year around one turn. He won the Hopeful, and he won the Champagne, and then was caught up in a hot pace in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile and faded to fourth. Third in the Juvenile that day was Keep Me in Mind, who subsequently then went on and won the Kentucky Jockey Club. He is a closer. So, but as you mentioned earlier, you mentioned Fire at Will. He's kind of my wild card. I guess I have him ranked higher than a lot of other folks that, look at the Derby. I think the big question mark with him is, will he take to the dirt? And that is, that's the huge question here. He is a horse that is by declaration at war. He's out of a Kitten's Joy mare. So you think turf, right? You know, and he won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf last year. But he also won the With Anticipation Stakes last year when he came off the grass at Saratoga. He was training well on the dirt. And I spoke to Mike Maker earlier this week, and Fountain of Youth on February 27th, is a possibility for him. So it should be pretty exciting.
Yeah, he's ultra-talented, and if he does take to the dirt, he could be any kind. So I think that's a really good wild card on your part. Number three on your list is Life is Good, and he's a horse that has proven to be a runner. He ran a big race in the Robert B. Lewis. Tell me about him.
Well, he's a horse that wants to go fast all the time. I mean, if you watch either of his two races or some of his works, when he has competition, he wants to be in front, and that is a great trait, provided there's not another horse that has the same style. It works well for him when he's been able to clear. I do wonder, if there's another horse like a Jackie's Warrior type that's very fast as well, how he might do. There was one workout, of course, this was just practice, but it was maybe a month or 6 weeks back, Baffert put him in company, and they intentionally rated him, and the workout was subpar. He fought the rider, and then when it was time to go in the stretch, he didn't have the same kick. And I think they kind of learned something from him then that let's not fool with it. If this is the way that he wants to run, we're going to let him roll. And he reminds me so much of Authentic. He's by the same sire, Into Mischief. You know, of course, Baffert trains him, so there's similarities there. But just in terms of the way he runs, he's just brilliantly fast. And the question will be, you know, how far he can go and whether or not he could do it if, you know, a pace is hot. And it's really exciting to see. I think he clearly belongs in the top three or so of just about anybody's list based on what he's done so far, because he is so brilliant in his races. Now, they were cutting into his lead a little bit last out when he ran in the Sham. Medina Spirit closed and was three quarters of a length behind him. But nevertheless, we saw from Medina Spirit last time out that he came back and he won the Bob Lewis. So clearly life is good, beat a very quality foe.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I think I misspoke when I said Life is Good ran a big race in the Robert B. Lewis. He ran a big race in winning the Sham Stakes. The horse he beat that day, Medina Spirit, as you just pointed out, came back and was gutsy in victory in the Robert B. Lewis last weekend. Number five on the list, Greatest Honor, and he put in a big effort last week in the Holy Bull, and he's a horse that I referenced this, Byron, last week on the show. He just continues to get better with every single start, and he's in great hands with Hall of Famer Shug McGahee.
Right. I mean, how can you not look at him and have images of Orb in your head? You know, the 2013 Kentucky Derby winner, Orb, really came into his own in Florida. You know, he prepped in the Fountain of Youth in the Florida Derby, and then he came up and won the Kentucky Derby. This horse reminds me a lot of him. I mean, you got to love the pedigrees by Tappet. And his dam, interestingly, is a half to rags to riches. And, you know, I mean, you just have this tremendous pedigree there that just screams, I want to run a mile and a quarter, if not longer.
Yeah, he's a very, very good horse. Anybody else in the top 12? Obviously, they're in there for a reason. You think that they're noteworthy, but a couple of the others that you think we should definitely keep an eye on.
Well, I think we're going to see a good acid test, I think, for Senior Buscador. He's a really interesting horse, a horse that blows the brake but then flies home. Both of his wins have been at Remington Park, so he's a little off the radar, I think, for most folks, you know. But he is supposed to come back in the Risen Star Stakes a week from today on February the 13th. That's a mile and an eighth. That'll be his first graded test. So I think that will really show us a lot, you know, whether this horse ranks up there with the top ones. It will also come without Lasix, which he raced with last year, so that is a bit of a question mark. And then another horse, and this one is running today, Concert Tour. He's running in the San Vicente at Santa Anita, and that's a 7/8 race, but, you know, it's not officially a Road to the Kentucky Derby qualifier, but it is very much a race that can generate, you know, Derby starters. Nadal won it last year before going on to Oaklawn Park, and this horse seems to be kind of on that path for Baffert.
Talking with Byron King from Blood Horse, he ranks his Derby dozen each week. You can see that on the Blood Horse website. You can also see it at americasbestracing.net. Byron, let's segue into the three Derby prep races coming up today, the 3 points races. You have the San Vicente at Santa Anita, the Sam F. Davis at Tampa Bay Downs, and the Withers in New York at Aqueduct. I went and looked at the Kentucky Derby media guide, and I have to tell you, I was very surprised to learn that of those three, only the San Vicente has had a horse come back and win the Kentucky Derby. No horse that has run the Sam F. Davis has ever gone on to win the Derby. Same for the Withers. But the San Vicente has been very productive. 10 horses have run in that race before wearing the roses. I was shocked to see that.
Wow, that's really that's a great stat. And you know, what's amazing about it is not a points-generating race. You know, it's not on Churchill's schedule. And I would assume that's because, you know, they view it as 7/8 of a mile and they're focused on routes. But, you're right. There have been some very good ones. You know, I'm not staring at the results right in front of me, but off the top of my head, I want to say Nyquist ran back in there, I think, in his first start of the year. So, I mean, you have some very, very good horses, even in recent years, that have run in there. And, you know, back in the day, too, long ago, when, you know, I think we saw more active schedules from some of these, you know, these three-year-olds before the Derby, you know, they would run in just about every prep that was out at a track leading up to, you know, the Kentucky Derby. And, you know, indeed, as we were talking about, you know, we got Nyquist and a lot of good horses over the years that have run in this. Silver Charm way back in 1997. So some good ones for sure.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And you're right, Nyquist, the last horse to compete in the San Vicente and go on and take the roses. Silver Charm was the one before him in 1997, which was the first win in that race for Hall of Famer Bob Baffert. We know what he's gone on to do. Looks like about 2 minutes, Byron, before I have to get to this next commercial break, but we'll go rapid fire, and I'll let you share your thoughts on some of the top contenders in each of the three Derby preps later today.
Okay, very good, yeah. Well, I think the Sam F. Davis is interesting in the sense that it's really large field. You have a lot of horses converging from all over the country. So I think that is a really intriguing race. I'll take a bit of a long shot in there, and I'm going to go with the rail-drawn Hidden Stash. Hidden Stash is 2 for 2 and stretching out to a route, both at 1 1/16. I always like in a large congested field where trips can be so important, a good draw. And in his case, I think the rail is a great draw for him. He's 10-1. He also won on the Stars of Tomorrow card at Churchill Downs last fall. And those cards have been highly productive at producing high-class horses. So he's my long shot pick. Also like Known Agenda in there, 3rd in the Remsen. However, I think he's going to be bet down. I don't think he'll be 6-1 on the line. I think you're probably looking at him being the favorite for Todd Fletcher, who has been dominant in this race. Some of the other ones, I think when you look at the Withers, I think Capo Kane is clearly the one to beat there, although he won the Jerome and a one-turn off. He has won around 2 turns. And I think that bodes well for his prospects of handling the extra distance here in the Withers. And then out west, as I mentioned earlier, you know, I think Concert Tour is the one to beat in the San Vicente.
How good is he? Byron King with the Blood Horse. Again, follow his Derby Dozen on the Blood Horse site and americasbestracing.net. Byron, appreciate the visit, my friend. Thanks for taking a little time, and we'll catch up again before that first Saturday in May, I promise.
I'll look forward to it, Mike. You guys keep up the great work, and we'll chat soon.
All right, Byron King here on HRRN. Yeah, how about that? I was shocked. I guess to me it was more surprising that the Withers has never had a horse come out of that race and go on and be a Kentucky Derby winner later that season. Shocked. The Withers and the Sam F. Davis. And again, the San Vicente has had 10. So of the three today, if you were going to pick one and say, okay, the Derby winner's racing here, it has to be, historically speaking, it has to be the San Vicente. And, of course, then you got Bob Baffert in that race, too. That certainly helps. But, yeah, nothing from the Withers, nothing historically from the Sam F. Davis. Crazy. All right, when I come back, it's time to call all three-year-olds, presented by Spendthrift. Bobby Newman will handle that. I'm going to visit with Ken Winebaugh, the husband of Cheryl Winebaugh. They will saddle Boca Boy, looking for their very first graded stakes victory in today's Sam F. Davis. We'll see if they can pull it off. I'll talk to Ken when I come back on the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Airdrie Studs Cairo Prince is the leading third crop sire by number of stakes winners, stakes horses, graded stakes winners, and graded stakes horses. He's also a top 5 general sire by the number of 2-year-old winners so far in 2020. And his current crop of yearlings is his first conceived at a $25,000 stud fee. Yearlings from Cairo Prince's fourth crop sold for up to $400,000 this year, underlining his incredible commercial appeal. At $15,000 stands and nurses for 2021, Cairo Prince's value in the extreme, standing at Airdrie Stud. Think about it.
The Virginia Stallion Auction returns Wednesday, February 10th, with open bidding on every season. The impressive list of quality seasons includes Ghost Sapper, Gunrunner, Liam's Map, Malibu Moon, More Than Ready, Midnight Loot, Union Rags, and many more. Plus seasons to horses who are full or close to full at the farm, such as Complexity, Not This Time, Omaha Beach, and Volatile. No guarantee seasons are a great way to save money on your stud fees. So mark your calendar. The Virginia Stallion Auction, Wednesday, February 10th, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern. Learn more at BABred.org.
Broken Vow, a top 15 lifetime active sire with over 170 black type horses, 90 black type winners, and approaching $80 million in progeny earnings. In 2020, Broken Vow produced Saratoga Springs winner Stan the Man and the Speedy M Primus, winner of the $700,000 turf sprint. Juvenile stakes horses include the Grass is Blue and Chasing Kara. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
The championship meet is on at Gulfstream Park. World-class racing Wednesday through Sunday. Thoroughbred stakes action continues with the Grade 2 Phasic Tipton Fountain of Youth and Grade 1 Florida Derby. Stay in the action from your mobile phone with the First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. First Bet offers predicted picks, high-definition live stream races, replays, and live betting from the palm of your hand. Visit GulfstreamPark.com for more information. That's GulfstreamPark.com.
I'm three-time Derby-winning jockey Gary Stevens.
This is Rosie Napravnik.
Hi, my name is Sean Bridgman.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia, and I listen to Horse Racing Radio.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Less than a quarter of a mile to come. Polka Boy has the lead. He's not home yet. Here, Breeze on by on the far outside, and Gatsby is between horses. From fourth and Hercules, and they turn in. It's Polka Boy who's still the target. Breeze on by tries to reach him late. From third and Gatsby, less than a 16th to go. Polka Boy trying to get home. Breeze on drive trying to pick him up. Breeze on by is not going to get by as Polka Boy is digging in. And Polka Boy for Teddy Fishbane to get the upset in the winning a length and a half in the end. Second was Breeze on by. Third was Season. Fourth, Gatsby in 146-1.
Big win for Polka Boy last time out at Gulfstream Park. That was Pete Aiello with the call in the In Reality Stakes. That's a race for Florida bred runners. And Polka Boy now has to step up and prove that he belongs on the big stage. In today's Grade 3, Sam F. Davis. And, boy, what a win it would be for Cheryl Weinbaugh and her husband, Ken, the husband-wife team that will saddle Polka Boy later today. Ken Weinbaugh going to be with me in just a few minutes right after our weekly Calling All Three-Year-Olds segment, I can say that, presented by Spendthrift.
They're all in line. And they're off.
Spendthrift Farm presents Calling All Three-Year-Olds with Bobby Newman.
There were two stops on the road to the Kentucky Derby last weekend, each worth 10 valuable points to the winners. Gulfstream Park featured the Grade 3 Holy Bull at a mile and a 16th. Todd Pletcher's Prime Factor was sent off the even money favorite after crushing maidens in his debut, but it was the Shug McGahee trained Greatest Honor who stole the show. He sat well behind an honest early pace, rallied wide under Jose Ortiz, and drew away down the lane to win impressively by almost six lengths. Final time was a solid 143. At Santa Anita, the Grade 3 Robert B. Lewis was held, and Bob Baffert's Medina Spirit was heavily favored after his game effort behind Derby favorite Life is Good in the Sham Stakes. He was sent straight to the lead and tenaciously held on for the narrow win over long-shot Roman Centurion and Breeders' Cup Juvenile runner-up Hot Rod Charlie. The three of them were only separated by about a neck on the line, and the final time for the mile and a 16th was 146-1. Three important races for the three-year-olds this afternoon, starting with Aqueduct's Grade 3 Withers at a mile and an eighth. Capo Kane and Eagle Orb finished 1-2 in the Jerome last out, and they renew their rivalry today. But there are several recent maiden breakers with chances at spoiling their party, including Royal Number, Mr. Dota, Risk Taking, and Donegal Bay. 10 important Derby points will go to the winner. Tampa Bay Down swings back onto the three-year-old scene with the Grade 3 Sam F. Davis at a mile and a 16th, and 10 Derby points await the winner. Stakes winners Polka Boy and Nova Rags take on graded stakes place runners Known Agenda and Smiley Sabatka, while up-and-comers Hidden Stash, Runway Magic, and Candyman Rocket should have a say too. Put it all together and you've got a very evenly matched race and a great handicapping puzzle. Santa Anita holds the Grade 2 San Vicente at 7 furlongs. No Derby points on the line, but impressive recent winners Concert Tour, The Chosen Vron, and Found My Ball all look to keep their good mojo rolling. I'll be back with this week's top five list right after this word from Spendthrift.
Dino Rosso, the most accomplished racehorse by leading sire Curlin. An undefeated two-year-old and major Kentucky Derby prep race winner as a three-year-old, multiple Grade 1 winner Vino Rosso won the Eclipse Award for Older Dirt Male at 4 after a dominant victory in the 2019 Breeders' Cup Classic, just like his sire Curlin a dozen years prior.
And it's a vintage performance by Vino Rosso!
His negative 6.25 thoroughgraph number marks the fastest in the history of the Breeders' Cup Classic. Champion Vino Rosso, standing at Spendthrift Farm.
This week's top five list of Derby contenders looks like this. Number one, Essential Quality. Undefeated, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Champ should return next week in the Grade 3 Southwest at Oaklawn on February 15th. Number two, Life is Good, also undefeated. Son of Into Mischief, looking at the Grade 2 San Felipe on March 6th at Santa Anita. Number three, Senor Buscador, also undefeated in two starts, coming off an eye-catching win in Remington's Springboard Mile. He's looking at the Grade 2 Risen Star at Fairgrounds on February 13th. Number four is Caddo River. He crushed fields in his last two starts, eyeing the Grade 2 Rebel at Oaklawn on March 13th. And number five, Concert Tour, very impressive getting his maiden win sprinting at Santa Anita for trainer Bob Baffert. He runs today in the Grade 2 San Vicente. That's your Calling All Three-Year-Olds segment presented by Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm.
Now, the excitement's going to build as we edge closer to that first Saturday in May. And for trainers Cheryl Weinbaugh and her husband Ken, the excitement is going to build as we edge closer to the 11th race at Tampa Bay Downs today. That is the Grade 3 Sam F. Davis Boca Boy, their Florida-bred 3-year-old gelded son of Perspective, set to go to the post, and he is one of just two stakes winners in today's field. So he's proven that he can win a stakes race. Now he has to prove he can do it in graded stakes company, and I know that Ken and Cheryl optimistic that he can pull that off, and Ken is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Ken, good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
Yeah, happy Sam F. Davis Day, and excited to see Boca Boy get out there and strut his stuff later today.
I'm very excited. He's been training really good coming into this race, so I'm very excited for him because I think he's going to run a big race.
Let's look back on his latest tally. That was last time out, September 26th at Gulfstream in the In Reality Stakes, a restricted stakes race. The waters get deeper today, but look back on that race and share your thoughts on that performance.
Well, he was an underdog in that race, too, because there was Ralph Nix had the 3-5 shot favorite to breeze on by. And I just told Edgar, I said, go out there and see if you can put him in front of him and then slow the pace down. So, and Edgar Zayas did a terrific job doing that with him, and he came out on top.
How big is it to come into a race like this? And this would be, by the way, the very first graded stakes victory for you and Cheryl, if Boca Boy can pull it off. But to come into a spot like this and know that, number one, you're one of only two stakes winners in the field, and number two, you've proven that you can handle two turns. How big is that?
That's a very big point. I think him being around two turns already and facing open company, I think he'll be okay in it. It's very exciting for me and Cheryl, you know, because we haven't won that graded one yet. We've come close, you know, a couple of times, but we're knocking on the door.
He's
looking really sharp.
Yeah, well, you brought him to Tampa Bay Downs a bit early to get him accustomed to the racetrack. He had that bullet work over the track back on January 29th. Tell me about that strategy and what you've seen from him since he's been there.
Well, I've been working him at Gulfstream, and the track is just a little bit faster than I heard it was at Tampa, so I figured I better get him over here and give him a good work over the track and see how he handles it, you know, because I heard it was a little cuppier track than a little sandier, a little deeper. And so I wanted to make sure we had him right, you know. So we shipped over about 10 days ago, gave him a couple of good gallops over the racetrack, and then gave him the breeze with the jockey. his rider today, Antonio. So, and he said he handled it really well, and I was surprised that he went it as fast as he did. I mean, I was just expecting I expected the 101, but I didn't expect to be the fastest work of the day.
You mentioned, Ken, that the track can be different, and it can be. We've heard that about Tampa Bay Downs for years. It's a completely different surface than Gulfstream Park. But you said that you were hearing these different things about the track. Is this the first time that you and Cheryl have started a horse at Tampa Bay?
I believe this is our first. Well, I run a filly on the grass a couple weeks ago. But, yeah, as far as running anything on the dirt, this is the first race on the dirt, yeah.
Wow, what a special moment it would be if Boca Boy can cross the finish line first. Do you even let yourself go there and think about what the moment would be like to win that first graded stakes victory?
Oh, yeah. It was hard to sleep last night thinking about it. We've been praying for this for a long time. So, you know, we're just a small trainer, you know, but we finally got a good colt, looks like. So it'll be very exciting. Mr. Fishbein is a great owner, and we talked about it yesterday how exciting this is going to be for us. So we're very excited, and I think the coach got a shot in here.
Yeah, he definitely has a shot. There's no doubt about it. And I guess the strategy would be similar to what we saw from him last time out, get him up in the race early and see what happens.
Yeah, I think we're going to use the same strategy, try to put him in. Put him on the front end and see if we can slow the pace down to our liking. If something goes and really goes to hook him, we're going to let him go. We're not going to get in the speed duel with him, because I think he can. He acts like he can run all day. So I'm not worried about his fitness. I think he should be fit enough to go all the way. You know, he's been around. Like I said, he's been around two turns already. So
yeah, talking with Ken Weinbaugh.
Be poorly placed. I think we're going to go to the first turn and see where we're at. Then go from there.
Yeah, take it from there. Talking with Ken Weinbaugh, the assistant trainer to his wife, Cheryl. Boca Boy going to the post in the Sam F. Davis later today at Tampa Bay Downs. Ken, when I reached out to Cheryl yesterday and asked about, I initially asked her to join me here on the program. She immediately steered me in your direction. You called me. So I'm going to ask you a question that I think every married man in America and around the world can relate to. What's it like to have your wife as your boss?
It's we've been together for 32 years now, so it's been it's been fun, and because we've been together training horses ever since we started. Yeah,
there's a saying that says don't work with family, but for you and Cheryl, this whole dynamic has just worked, and it continues to work at a very high level.
It's been a good combination. She keeps me in line, and I keep her in line, and we work good together.
Yeah, you know, and it hasn't been, you know, they say racing has the highest highs and the lowest lows. This journey for you and Cheryl has not been without the lowest lows. You're 13 months removed from the stroke that you suffered back in 2019 at the end of the year, which left you partially paralyzed on your left side. Number one, how are you feeling? And number two, talk about going through something like that together.
Well, I'm going to tell you, it was, like I said, December 21st, I had the stroke. And if it wasn't for my other assistant trainer who helps us out, we had just shipped all the horses down to Gulfstream a year ago. And his name is Joel Martinez. He's been a heaven sent. And he's put a lot of time in this coat. In fact, he's the one who picked him out as a baby. I sent him over to look at the coat, and I said, "Now, how's the coat look?" And he was telling me and took pictures of him. And I got a funny story that he's a younger kid, so he's like 24 years old. And he come under our wings about 2 years ago, and he said he wanted to become a trainer. So me and Cheryl, we took him under our wing and got him his trainer's license just before we shipped all the horses down last year, and thank God we did. So he's a good kid, and he picked the colt out, and I'm feeling great now. I'm back on my feet, and And me and Joel are training this horse to the, I think we're doing a good job with him.
Yeah, it's a great story. Are you able, Ken, to have use of your left side now in full as opposed to before?
Oh yeah, I'm up walking without a cane now. I got just a little paralyzed in my left foot, but other than that, I'm still walking good.
Well, thank goodness, and I know you'll enjoy that walk to the winner's circle later today with Boca Boy if he can somehow find a way to pull this one off. And Ken, listen, it's a great story. Very easy to cheer for you and for Cheryl. You know, you go in there and there's Bill Mott and there's Todd Pletcher and there's Ken and Cheryl Weinbaugh, and it's going to be a special moment for you guys today. So enjoy every second of it.
I appreciate it, Mike. Thank you.
All right. All the best, my friend. We'll be cheering, and pass along my best to Joel Martinez as well.
Thank you.
All right, Ken Weinbaugh here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. What a fantastic story. That interview, as all of our interviews are on the Equine Forum, is brought to you by Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. Yeah, fantastic. Good luck to Ken and Cheryl later today. When I come back, you're going to hear this week's edition of Unsung Heroes presented by Claiborne. And trust me, it is one you will not want to miss. This individual, a true unsung hero in the sport of thoroughbred racing. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Justify, a four-time Grade 1 winner, Eclipse Champion 3-year-old, Horse of the Year, and the only undefeated Triple Crown winner. By Sire of Sires, Scat Daddy, Justify's first foals sold for up to $600,000 at the recent November sales, while his in-foal mares were led by the three-time Grade 1 winning daughter of Uncle Mo, Bast, who sold for $4.2 million to Spendthrift Farm. Justify has covered over 80 Grade 1 winners or dams of Grade 1 winners in his first 2 years at Ashford. Call the team at Ashford today to book your mare while there are still seasons available. The Virginia Stallion Auction returns Wednesday, February 10th, with open bidding on every season. The impressive list of quality seasons includes Ghost Sapper, Gunrunner, Liam's Map, Malibu Moon, More Than Ready, Midnight Luke, Union Rags, and many more. Plus seasons to horses who are full or close to full at the farm, such as Complexity, Not This Time, Omaha Beach, and Volatile. No guarantee seasons are a great way to save money on your stud fees. So mark your calendar. The Virginia Stallion Auction, Wednesday, February 10th, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern. Learn more at VABred.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment. Along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Heroes in the world of sports are not uncommon. Oftentimes, thrusting themselves into the limelight through unimaginable feats.
Back behind the ball, Woods puts it.
Get in! He has done it! Tiger is back! Tiger is back on top! Tiger Woods, the 2019 Masters champion.
And breathtaking performances.
Here's how you count to 8, 3, 2, 1. And for the 8th time, college basketball's national championship trophy is coming home to Kentucky.
But behind every great hero, there are others. Individuals who play a crucial role in the achievements of those we read about in the headlines. The ultimate team players, content to stand behind the curtain, embracing their place as a vital part of a sport's success. In horse racing, these are the unsung heroes.
Well, the sport of thoroughbred racing is filled with unsung heroes, the individuals who work tirelessly behind the scenes 365 days a year and rarely find themselves in the headlines or in the limelight. And today, I have the privilege to visit with yet another unsung hero here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, Junior McFarlane, who has worked with Jimmy Jerkins and his dad, the Chief, for many, many years. He shows up every morning at the barn, he grooms the horses, and he does it in such a manner that he is this week's unsung hero. Junior, appreciate the visit, my friend.
You're so welcome, sir.
Yeah, excited to hear your story. And you know, I asked listeners if they had anybody that they felt was worthy and deserved to be an unsung hero on this particular segment, if they would email the show and let me know. And Ed Sehan was kind enough to send me your information and your name, so here we are in touch, and I'm excited to hear your story. Where did it all begin for you, Junior?
Well, you know, I was actually in the city, you know, working in some plumbing fields, you know, and business got slow, you know, like 30 years ago, you know, so I always loved horses and wanted to be among horses and stuff like that. So after being laid off and didn't have any income or whatever, just decided to go to Belmont Park and, you know, call up Mr. Jerkins at the main gate, you know, to have a little talk with him to see if he could give me a job, knowing that I didn't have any experience or nothing. But I always read about Alan Jerkins and always heard that he was a great man and one of the best trainer around, so I decided to see him, you know. So I went there one afternoon about 12:30 and asked the security to page him, and they paged him, and he came to the gate, you know, looking all strange. I said, who want to see me now? I said, you know, and I said, well, look, man, I said, I want to see you, sir. I heard that you're a very good person and you're one of the best trainer in the country, so I just decided to talk to you and see if you could have anything for me to do around the barn. And he said, yeah. Then Alan Jerkin asked me, you know, do you have any experience with horses? Do you know how to rub horses? So I said to him that, you know, I don't know. What do you mean, like rub your hand on the horses? And he laughed and said, oh, come on. In my whole stage right now, I'm supposed to teach a person how to groom a horse. So I said, no, Alan Jerkin, that's what you mean, groom them? Yes, I can. And he said, you know what? You looks like a guy that is willing and you want to learn. So here's $20. Come back to work 6 o'clock in the morning and I'll find something for you to do. You know, so after then, you know, I was so excited about it, you know, knowing that I'm going to do what I like, what I always wanted to do. So I went home and I was really excited. I tell my child's mother that, you know, I think I'm get a job and everything is going to be okay. And everybody was excited. So I went back to work in the morning. And the chief had me around, you know, raking up and cleaning up and, you know, walking horses. Okay, within 2 weeks, you know, he's had me, like, rubbing horses and, you know, cleaning stalls and stuff like that. And within 2 weeks, he gave me a real good horse by the name of Gringo Pilot, you know. And I start taking care of him. And first time he ran, he won for me. And then right after that, you know, everything that I put my hands on was just winning, you know. So I spent like about 5 years with the chief, and Jimmy Jerkin was the assistant. And Jimmy Jerkin asked me, you know, if I wanted to go with him because he's going to go on his own to start training his horses. So I said, great, you know. So Jimmy Jerkin and I went on our own about 1996, and from there on, he had a horse by the name of 9th Innings that the chief gave him. Was a maiden filly that never run before, but that was one of his first horse he gave him, which became his first winner in his career that I rubbed. Her name is 9th Innings and owned by Peter Blum, apparently the owner of the Kentucky Derby this year, you know.
Yeah.
So after that, I went with Jimmy Jerkin. I have nothing but success. you know, win a lot of grade one races for the guy. You know, he treats me real decent, you know. And then, you know, just caring for the horses, you know, just gives me a pleasure. They're very gentle, gentle animals, you know. And you just dream to just wake up and go see them and stuff like that, you know, to take care of them. And, you know, it's just all started like that. And, you know, I take care of a lot of great horses, you know, like Corinthians, you know, Art Schiller, you know, Green Light Go, and so many of them. That's You, Miss Blue, you know, Preservationist, you could name them all. But it's just a pleasure doing that. And, you know, it just fills my heart to know how it's all started and how it's all worked out for me. So grateful.
Yeah, and you should be, Junior. It's been quite a ride. When you describe to people what the relationship is like between a groom and a horse, that is a very special bond, especially when it comes to a horse that's a really good horse, like you just mentioned. How do you describe it? What's that bond like?
Oh, it is a special bond because, you know, when you've been around a horse every day, he looks forward for your care, you know, and your tender touch. And, you know, the more love you show a horse, the more he puts out for you. They know when you're not, you know, fond of them. And, you know, you just have to show them a lot of love and, you know, and do your job right, and they'll really respond to you. You know, it means everything to me. They do.
Is it hard when they retire and they go to stud and you don't get to see them anymore?
Oh, tell me about it. Yeah, very hard. You know, I got quite a few of them that, you know, really they ease with me now. That makes me break down. Like Corinthian, Preservationist, you know, that seems those horses, you know, they were my love. You know, I really look forward to, you know, see those horses in the morning. So, you know, after their days were over and I have to take them to the truck and, you know, kiss them goodbye or give them a candy, you know, that's real tough, you know. But, you know, they're in a better place and, you know, they're going to enjoy life. So you just got to just move on, you know.
Talking with Groom Junior McFarlane here on Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne, and he truly is an unsung hero in this sport. As you heard him say, he started with the Chief, now works with Jimmy Jerkins, his son, since 1997. What kind of teacher, Junior, was the Chief?
Oh, excellence. Was very tough. He was very tough, but he wanted everybody to get a heads up in life. You know, he didn't care who you are, whether you have experience or you know anything. You know, he just helped a lot of people and just willing to see people move up in life and, in other words, give them a chance. You know, he was just a great man, a great human being.
How do you describe working with Jimmy then as opposed to working with his dad? What's the same? What's different?
You know, Jimmy is almost the same like his father. You know, he takes a lot of the same good and bad qualities from his father. You know, we all got good and bad qualities in us, you know, and we always talk about the good, we never talk about the bad. But, you know, Jimmy Jerkin is just like his father. You know, he helps a lot of people, and, you know, Jimmy and I have a really good bond together. You know, he always looked out for me in every way he can. He makes sure that I have all his best horses and stuff like that. You know, if there's a good horse coming to barn, I'm the first one that, you know, he'll tell about it and make sure it's in my stall. And, you know, he's a very great guy, you know, very great guy. I love him to death.
Junior, what's your typical day like? It obviously starts early, but what's the day like for you?
Oh, yeah, well, for me, my days start about 3:30 in the morning. You know, just get up, make my coffee. I run over to the Dunkin' Donuts and get my coffee, and I'm back in the barn like about 10 minutes to 4. You know, first thing I do, I give each one of my horses a candy, you know, a little hug, and, you know, they start nickering as soon as I walk in the shed where it's pitch dark, and I'm the only one in there that time, you know, so I just start turning on the lights and stuff like that. They all start nickering and calling, you know, because they're used to that candy and that love in the morning. They know their master is there, you know. So I just started, like, tying each of them up to the back in the stall and, you know, start cleaning each one's stall, you know, which takes about 10 minutes per stall. I usually take care of four or five horses, you know. And then after that, you know, at about 5:30, you have to start, you know, getting the first horse ready to go to the track to train, you know, and finish training about 10:30 in the morning, you know. Then you have to start cleaning them up and doing up their legs and massaging them at about 11 o'clock. You know, you make their feed and give them their food and stuff like that. After that, we get a break from then until about 3 o'clock. You got to go back again and clean their stall and give them fresh water, feed them about 4 o'clock, 4:30, you know, and then that's actually it for the day, you know, until the next morning again.
Did you ever give any thought, Junior, to maybe training horses on your own someday?
Oh, definitely, yes. Definitely, yes. I would like to own a horse and train one on for a while. When I still have a lot to learn, but I think I could do it. I have a lot of experience from the Chief and Jimmy, you know. So I would like to get a chance one day to do this on my own.
Well, you've certainly learned from two of the best. If somebody comes to you, Junior, and they say, hey, I want to get into racing, and I think that I'd like to start by grooming horses and learning all I can, what advice do you give them? What do you tell them about getting started to be a groom?
Well, you have to love what you love, what you're going to do. You have to, you know, you have to have passion. You have to have care for the horses, and don't get in it if you're not going to love what you do. If you're not going to love the horses, don't even get into it. You know, because they need a lot of care and attention. You know, and you just have to love them and give them all the bond you can, and, you know, sacrifice and put horses first, and you will achieve what you want.
Junior, I'll ask you one more question before I let you go. You've obviously worked your tail off to get to the point where you are today, and you weren't shy about going up to the Chief and asking him for a job, which I think is just spectacular. He accommodated, and now you're in a great position. And I guess I'll ask you this. What is it that you're most proud of when you think back on everything you've accomplished in working with the Chief and working with Jimmy?
Well, the experience, you know, the knowledge that, you know, I really achieved by spending the time, you know, in my career with them. You know, I walk around the racetrack, you know, it gives me joy to hear the people say, you know, that's the best groom on the racetrack. And, you know, everywhere I go, you know, people always tell me that. I've seen owners, you know, and everybody always tell me that, you know, and it gives me joy to see people acknowledge what I do and, you know, and see the success that I have with horses, you know. It does, you know.
Well, Junior, on behalf of Horse Racing Radio Network and our entire industry, thank you for doing what you do. Keep up the wonderful work, and it has been such a delight to spend some time with you here this morning. Congratulations on being this week's unsung hero, my friend.
Thank you very much for the exposure, and may God bless you, and you have a great day.
All right, you too, my friend. Junior McFarlane, longtime groom, as you heard, for the Chief, Alan Jerkins, and now working with his son, Jimmy Jerkins, since 1997, and what a relationship it's been. I'll be back after this word from Claiborne.
Eclipse champion Blame. Ranked among the top stallions of his crop, Blame has sired over 60 stakes horses. His recent top performers include Grade 1 Arkansas Derby winner Nadal, graded stakes winner Blame Debbie, and these graded stakes performers. Outstanding value, outstanding results. Blame, standing at Claiborne Farm.
If you have someone you feel deserves to be recognized as an unsung hero, send me an email, mike@horseracingradio.net. Tell me about their story, and we'll try to have them on the program and feature them as an unsung hero in that particular spot. Wonderful stuff from Junior. My thanks to him and to Ed Sion for putting me in touch with Junior for that segment. I'm back to get ready for Hour 3 on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
70 organizations, 160 facilities, 7,800 horses, one accreditation. The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance is the only accrediting body in thoroughbred aftercare and is supported by all aspects of the thoroughbred industry. To learn more or to support the TAA, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
Learn more at She Can STEM, a message brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Kelsey Grammer. When military service members head into battle, none are expected to face the enemy alone, but many return home and become isolated as they struggle with the visible and invisible wounds of war. It can be difficult knowing how to overcome that challenge and rekindle bonds similar to those formed in the military. Wounded Warrior Project supports these injured veterans through their recoveries by connecting them with fellow warriors and their communities. No one should fight this battle alone. Join us at WoundedWarriorProject.org.
Get in-depth handicapping advice on the Weekend Stakes Preview, presented by Naira Betts. Every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, Anthony Stabile and Bobby Newman look forward to all of the weekend's biggest stakes races and break down each one with expert analysis. Get a jump on the competition with the Weekend Stakes Preview, presented by Naira Betts. Fridays at 6 on Sirius 219 XM 201. Or streaming at horseracingradio.net.
Hey, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, reminding you that Race Day on HRRN, presented by Twin Spires, comes your way every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern. Bobby Newman joins me to bring you all of the fall and winter action from places like Aqueduct, Gulfstream, Santa Anita, Del Mar, and Churchill, as well as interviews with the biggest players in thoroughbred racing. That's Race Day on HRRN, presented by Twin Spires. Tune in on Sirius 219, XM 201, or stream it live at horseracingradio.net.
This is Elliot Walden, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
If you enjoy the outdoors, hunting, fishing, whatever it might be, check out the brand new Outdoor Superstore by Whitetail Heaven. It is Whitetail Heaven Outfitters' elite outdoor superstore. It is in Nicholasville, Kentucky, just 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road. If you're a turkey hunter, a deer hunter, a duck hunter, if you like fishing, head out there and check them out. The store is owned by former horse trainer Tevis McCauley, and if you're looking for any type of hunting clothing, boots, tree stands, blinds, or equipment, you have to go to Whitetail Heaven Outfitters' Elite Outdoor Superstore. Trust me, you won't be disappointed. He even has a couple of archery ranges down in the basement, which is really neat. Great way to try out your bow. Make sure you head down there and check them out. Well, that's going to do it for the first couple of hours here on the Equine Forum, but I am a long way from being done here this morning. Hour 3 comes your way next, right up until 11 a.m. Eastern. I'm going to kick off the third hour with another new weekly segment, which debuted last week. It is In the Room with Sean Clancy, a one-on-one conversation with journeyman jockey Trevor McCarthy. You won't want to miss that. Also going to take a stroll through racing history with Kurt Becker, and I'll give you the chance to be part of the show as I open up the phone lines in our new weekly call-in segment coming up at 10:40 Eastern. If your local station is leaving us at this time, you can continue listening to the show nationwide on Sirius 219, XM 201, in the Louisville, Kentucky market on ESPN 680, or on your computer, phone, or tablet at horseracingradio.net. Hour 3 of the Equine Forum is next, right after this 10-second pause for station identification on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And the Chosen Braun digs in. In fact, he kicks away smartly. And the Chosen Braun clear by 3.5 suddenly. Big story, Warren's Candyman battling out the Miners, but a good-looking debut for the Chosen Braun, giving John Velasquez 2 on the afternoon. They rock almost 7 lengths.
Here's Smiley Sabatka, narrow lead into the final furlong. And Smiley Sabatka still challenged by Windcracker to the inside. They've opened up by 6, back to Business Model in third, Anti-Gravity fourth. Smiley Sabatka, Joe Talamo kicking clear in the closing strides to win it.
They're coming down to the quarter pole. Capo Kane, he's been there from the start. Dylan Davis took a peek back to see that Swill's under a ride. Eagle Orb is coming 3 wide as the field makes their way down to the 8th pole. It's still Capo Kane. He's trying to take him gate to wire in the Jerome, and he's opened up a 2-length lead now. Capo Kane, he wanders to the middle of the track past the 16th pole, but he's 3 lengths in front of Eagle Orb and comes down to the line. A 5-length winner of the Jerome, Capo Kane.
I wasn't worried about going into the Jerome going a mile because I know he's got a lot of tactical speed, and I know he's bred to go long 2 turns, obviously, but I knew he's got a lot of tactical speed, and I wasn't too bothered about it. And the mile and eighth, I think, was suiting real good.
Welcome to the Equine Forum. Now, here's Mike Penna.
Welcome back. Hour 3 of the Equine Forum rolling on right up until 11 a.m. Eastern. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you with me as I bring you some new segments, referenced them just a short time ago. Going to be a jam-packed third hour of the program. And if you missed any portion of the first 2, all you have to do is head back to my website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows at your leisure. You heard trainer Harry Weiner talking about Capo Kane at the end of that open, and Capo Kane running today in the Withers at Aqueduct. You had 3 Derby points races today. The Withers, you have the Sam F. Davis at Tampa Bay Downs, and the San Vicente out at Santa Anita. If you're looking for the Derby winner, you might want to just forget about the Withers and the Sam F. Davis. No horse has ever competed in either of those 2 races and gone on to wear the roses. Shocking. But that's according to the Churchill Downs Derby Media Guide. I was shocked to see that, probably more so with the Withers. Whereas the San Vicente, there have been 10 horses to come through there, the last being Nyquist, and go on and win the Kentucky Derby later that same season. Interesting stuff. Poll question today, playing into Super Bowl weekend. So many of you taking the time to weigh in. With the Battle of the Goat versus the Baby Goat in the Super Bowl tomorrow, which is what it's being billed as, which jockey do you consider to be the greatest of all time? Kind of shocked. No Sean Clancy votes in here. Brutal. Angel Cordero Jr. getting a shout-out from the Big A, Anthony Stabile, Sandy Hawley, Johnny V. getting a couple of votes. The Kid, Steve Cawthon. The Raging Cajun, Randy Romero. That's a good one. Jorge Chavez and Lafitte Pinkai. Keep them coming. At HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Which jockey do you consider to be the greatest of all time? Going to open up the phone lines coming up right around 10:40 Eastern time. If you want to look back and share some stories on trainer Julio Canani, who passed away yesterday, I welcome those phone calls at 10:40. Also, if you want to talk about the prep races coming up later today, we can do that too. 10:40 Eastern time. Last week, we debuted a brand new segment here on the Equine Forum called In the Room with former jockey Sean Clancy. Both Sean and I received a ton of positive feedback from so many of you who enjoyed his unique one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation with Kendrick Carmouche. This week, Sean sits down with another veteran jockey, Trevor McCarthy, to explore his life and his career. Trevor grew up the son of jockey Michael McCarthy, who rode more than 2,900 winners, and is married to current rider Katie Davis, the daughter of jockey Robbie Davis. So let's do it. Let's go in the room with Sean Clancy, presented by ThisIsHorseRacing.com.
Rainbow Air, win number 1,000 for the great Trevor McCarthy. It comes in the Wolf Hill Stakes as Rainbow Air wins it.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
Hi, I'm Sean Clancy, and today I'm in the room with jockey Trevor McCarthy, winner of 1,582 races for over $53 million in purses. The 26-year-old has already won 11 races in 2021, including the Jimmy Wingfield Stakes at Aqueduct last weekend. Trevor, you had a hell of a 2020. You get COVID, you get married, and you win 143 races. What was that like?
It was good. It was actually really good for the year that we had. It was a little bit of a slower year than we're used to. But with all the, the restrictions and with me getting COVID, with me going away to get married and, being out for about 3 months due to the COVID situation, I lost a lot of time, and, it just seemed like even after the summertime, you had to quarantine to go to this track and quarantine to go to that track and back to this track, so it was a lot of quarantining and testing and a little bit of a pain in the butt with everything. But, we got through this year with a pretty successful year, and I was really happy with it.
And the COVID situation, when you came down with COVID, what was that like? You had to be concerned? You have a couple bad days, or what was that like?
Of course, when you first get it and you test positive for it, you're pretty concerned. For me, I was riding down at Colonial at the time. I came home for a couple days after riding Colonial and came back to Maryland, and I just wasn't feeling good. I hung out at home for a few days, didn't really go anywhere. And I just, one night I woke up in the middle of the night at around 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning, and I was freezing to death. Chills, so cold. I was like, that's weird, And I just ran into the living room, grabbed another blanket, and went back to bed. And a couple hours later, I woke up and I was sweating. Full out sweat. And I'm like, oh man, this is just odd, And now another hour goes by, I wake up, I'm freezing cold again. And I'm like, man, I'm really getting worried, because, everybody's, it's COVID year and, everybody's nervous about it. And so now we wake up early to leave that morning to go down to work horses at Colonial. And Katie wakes up and she goes, all right, come on, let's go, get up. I said, we're not going to go anywhere. And what do you mean? I have a bunch of horses to work this morning. I said, I'm sick as a dog. I've got chills. I got a fever now. I got a headache. I just think, I'm really not feeling that great. We shouldn't risk it. And at that time, I was doing really good at the Colonial meet. I was leading rider. I was winning 4 or 5 a night. And it was like the worst thing that could happen. It was almost like I was doing so good. And I was like, man, it's like something's bound to happen, Because it's just like everything is falling in the right place at the right time. I can't do anything wrong. I'm in the zone. And it's just like, it's too good to be true. After being sick in bed for about 2 days, it was more like a flu for me. If I had to put it to any sense, it was like having the flu. I was sick for 2 days. And by the third day, I was feeling much better. So I scheduled a test to go get tested. And sure enough, I was positive. And Katie was negative, which was odd, because she never left my side. We do everything together. We live together. We eat together. We work together. So for her to not get it was a bit odd. And then I was sick for, probably 5-6 days. After the 7th and 8th day, I was fine. I only lost my taste and smell for a day. And I went back 2 weeks later. I got a test, and I was negative. Which they thought I would be positive again, but if I were to quarantine for 14 days, I'd be fine. But they thought it was very unusual that I was negative, and they thought it was very unusual that Katie came up negative again 2 weeks later after she quarantined with me. and she never left my side. She only got one symptom, and that was she lost her taste and smell. But she never had a fever. She never got cold, chills, none of that. So it was really an odd experience.
Well, Katie's just tougher than you.
Yeah, I guess so. You can put it that way.
What's it like being married to a jockey? Does that help or hurt? I mean, what's it like for you you guys got to kind of be there for each other and try to learn from each other, I guess, being jockeys?
Yeah, in the beginning, dating, it was a little unusual, you know, because here I'd have a great day and then she wouldn't have a good day. So she'd be kind of down the dumps and then I'd be on a high, you know. So we would go home and you know, I would have a bad day and she'd have a good day, you know, and it's like, you know, when I have a good day, I try and pick her up. When I have a bad day and she has a good day, she tries to pick me up and we try and always bounce off each other and throw each other pointers. And, you know, I've learned a lot from her and changed, you know, certain styles or tried new things that, she might, you know from, either, you know, learning in experience or, you know, learning from her father. And, you know, I try and pass her on things that I've learned from my father. So it really worked out well in that sense. With this year, with the COVID, it's been really stressful on us both because, you know, I was traveling different places and, you know, we weren't allowed to go places and then come back and not be with each other. So, like, for instance, she wanted to stay in Maryland to ride, and I was going to go down to Colonial. Well, Laurel didn't want us to separate. You know, they wanted us to stay together and pick one track to ride at. And they were kind of saying that, you know, we don't want you guys going back and forth, and God forbid you bring it back and she gets sick and so forth. Same here with this situation at Naira this winter. With the coupling, us being an entry, that's been really hard because, you know, it's got a little bit of an effect on our business. At the moment, we're having the jockeys go work to resolve this problem with the New York State Gaming Commission. And, you know, it's kind of hurting us in the long run because NYRA is just the racing office. They sometimes won't use races because they have the couple or you know they're you know we won't be able to pick up horses because you know it's not possible to make up an entry last minute and you know they don't want to use races that are going to have entries when there's you know 4, 5, 6 horse fields and small fields, so they won't even use the races. So sometimes we have to sit out races to let the races go, which is a huge effect on both of our business. So there's just been a lot of obstacles this year for both of us. But, you know, we both love each other and we both support each other and try and do the best we can. And at the end of the day, we come home healthy and safe. And we just, you know, try and go out there and do it the next day again. So
That's important. That's the way to keep it, and you got a good perspective on it. Take me back to the beginning. I mean, your dad, obviously, very successful jockey. Did you always want to be a jockey? Watching him ride as a kid, was it always in your mind? Yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
Since day one, it's been on my mind. You know, it was like, my mother says that she would take me to. I had afternoon preschool, so. She'd take me, I had morning preschool. She would take me to the races after preschool. I got out. My preschool was right there, next to Delaware Park. So we used to go to the races to watch my father ride. And I used to hang onto the fence and scream, kick and scream. And she'd be trying to pull me off the fence to go home, you know. And I didn't want to leave. And the last race of the day, you know, I couldn't wait till the last race because, you know, then my father, he'd bring me up to the jocks room, you know, after he rode. And he would shower, and I'd be able to hang up in the jocks room, wait for him, and hang out with all the jocks and be in the room. And even in the morning, you know, same thing. I'd just want to get up in the morning. Sometimes I would beat him in the morning. I'd be up at 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, going to his bed. Dad, are you ready yet? You know, are you awake? And he's like, we still got another hour of sleep. Go back to sleep, you know. But I just couldn't. I couldn't wait to be out there with him and follow him and just learn so much from him. I just, you know, he was like an idol to me, like a hero. So it was just great following him around.
Sure, exactly. And did he ever give you any advice or ever try to talk you out of it, or was he always 100% supportive?
No, always 100% supportive, always. And, you know, sometimes I think, man, you know, for my kids, you know, sometimes I think, man, I hope they are not riders. But sometimes I'm like, oh, I hope they are riders. For him, he was like set, like, oh, this kid wants it. I'm going to push this kid, you know. And he's pushed me, you know, pretty far, pretty hard. And even in the beginning when I started riding, it was like every race, he's on the phone with me after every race. And, you know, you got to do this, you got to do that. And, you know, all the jocks be like, man, tell your dad, stop calling. You know, I'd come in from a race, oh, your phone's ringing, your dad's on the phone, you know. So he was tough on me, but you know, I was glad he was tough on me.
Well, and what did he tell you? What's one of the few things you learned from him?
Biggest thing that he always says, you know, save ground, you know, stay on the fence, save ground, be patient. You know, he'd always push that into my head. You know, be patient, save ground. You know, don't worry, don't stress, don't get in a panic. You know, if you got a horse, you'll be able to get out somewhere down the line most, you know, 9 times out of 10. So just be patient. And, you know, that was big for me.
Well, back when I was riding jump races, I was sitting in the hot box at Delaware Park, and he walked in there and he looked at me, and I guess I was a little bit of a heavy jump jock, and he looked at me and he said, you ought to be ashamed of yourself sitting in here looking like that. And I thought, wow. And his discipline was something that I picked up on, you know, as I watched him. I was galloping for Roger Atfield, and he'd come in there and work some horses for us back then. That's something you had to pick up, I guess, that discipline with your weight, with the approach to riding races.
Yeah, it's hard, you know, and you got to be disciplined. You got to be dedicated. And for me, I don't have a choice, you know, and it's like, I have to lose weight. I have to watch my diet. You know, I have to work out, you know, 6 out of the 7 days a week. So I have to stay fit. You know, I don't have a choice. You know, if I stop riding, or, you know, if I stop working out, you know, I get pretty heavy. So, you know, for me, it's always discipline, always trying to better myself, always trying to stay focused and, you know, study, you know, just try and treat myself like an athlete the best I can, you know. So, you know, treat my body well. I get work done on my body, chiropractor. I do cryotherapy, acupuncture. I do a lot of stretching at night, in the daytime before I ride. So I always just try and, you know, take care of my body.
Definitely, and you can tell that by how you ride. I mean, you're a very strong rider, and you know, built like your dad, taller than most guys. Is that something you have to work on? I mean, emulating other jockeys and to try to fold that style and get low.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It's like with Katie, you know, she's so small. She's like a little ball, and you know, here I am. We're at dinner, you know, and she orders the penne alla vodka. I order, you know, fish with maybe some broccoli, and you know, we're looking over at each other. This is when we first started dating, like, you know, and I'm like sitting there, I'm like, man, you kidding me? Like, she's like, what? You know, and I'm like, here I am. Oh no, I'm sorry. It was like a filet mignon, or you know, a big T-bone steak and like potatoes, and you know, I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, I'm over here. This guy's probably like, man, what a wussy this guy is, you know. He's getting a fish and broccoli, and here's his girlfriend. You know, she's got steak and potatoes, you know. And I'm like, man, you have no idea. You know? And she's like, well, what do you mean? You know, so now after 3 years of dating, she finally gets it. You know, she finally understands, like, okay, when we come home and we eat, you know, we have to eat light, you know, salad and fish and all that. And for her, you know, she can kind of eat whatever she wants. But, you know, it's kind of better that I've kind of bettered her diet by her hanging out with me. But, you know, back to you saying, you know, folding up and stuff like that, that's different things where I try and tell her, you know, she's got to fold up. And she's like, oh, I can't, you know, I'm trying to get as low as I can, you know. But I feel like for some of those little riders, they're like, you know, like Katie, she's like a little ball, you know. And some of them guys, they're small, but they ball up a little bit. And for her, she's got really big legs, and she's solid, you know, and big shoulders, big back. She's solid. And for us, I think it might be a little bit easier to fold up just because we're so tall. You know, we got to get down, and we're so skinny, and we can, you know, flat, kind of lay flatter than some of these guys that kind of sit a little higher up and almost like that ball-y effect.
For sure. You want to be the lizard on the log, right?
Yeah, you know, it's something I've been working on at Aqueduct. I found that, you know, the wind is so strong, you know, so I'm like, man, I got to really get low the whole way, you know, stay in a good stance, you know, and try and be as aerodynamic as I can, because the wind is just so, so strong here coming off the water. And we get some of these days, and it's like, man, you know, that's a lot for horses. I mean, it's a big weight difference. Sometimes that's a little edge that I get that some people don't realize.
And take me through the move to New York. You're based there this winter. Is your plan to stay there year-round, or you take that as it comes? Or what's the strategy?
You know, I'm just going to stay for the wintertime with Laurel and all the restrictions. I'm kind of like, man, I'm missing out on some of the horses that were traveling around this summer. And, you know, New York, they have a great stakes program, and they upped their purses big time this year. So, you know, I kind of want to take a step forward, see where things go, and, you know, try and learn a few different other things, being at a different racetrack. You know, it's just like being at one racetrack all the time, you don't get to learn everything, you know. You learn different things, being around different jockeys at different racetracks. You learn how to ride that track. So for me, it's a great learning experience to get out, try and make some connections over the winter time, and then go back home. And when those guys kind of ship down and they kind of know us a little bit more, and we can build some connections for our shipping business down at Laurel. So it's just kind of like a stepping stone, I would say.
No, you've done that very well. You've taken your stepping stones. We watched you grow up around Fair Hill, riding out for your dad and Grand Motion, and you're making it big. Very proud of you. One last question. Who's on the Mount Rushmore of jockeys for you, the guys that you emulate, your heroes?
I would say my hero, I would say that's riding now, a hero would be Johnny B. He's a guy that is so passionate about the sport. He's very passionate about jockeys, you know, and sometimes he's very strong in his opinions on what needs to be done for us. And, you know, he's a world-class rider. I love the way he rides. He's a little taller like I am. And just watching him, I've learned so much from him, and just talking with him, you know, he's just one of those guys that I just, like, pay attention to all the time. Yeah, he's an older guy. Does he win all the races in the world like he used to? No, but he still knows how to get it done. He still knows how to win the big races. And, you know, just watching him and listening to him all the time is so huge to me, you know. And I worship that guy. He's like my idol. He is my idol.
Yeah, I always say with Johnny, though, he's the most definitive rider I've ever seen. He makes decisions. Even when they're wrong, he makes decisions. If you watch him day in, day out, he makes decisions. Whether he's going to the lead or getting the spot, saving ground, or coming from out of it, he always makes those decisions. It's something a jockey has to do.
Yeah, he's very, like you said, with his decisions, he's very firm on them. So if he goes out there and he gets a feeling or a gut feeling, it's like, bang, he does it. Bang, he does it. And Mike Smith the same way. Boom, they do it, you know. It's like they go for it, and if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't, you know. But at the same time, when they see a window open of an opportunity either to get in or get out or take advantage of a spot, or maybe somebody made a wrong move, they're going to take advantage of it, and they don't even question themselves, you know, because they just have all that experience.
That's Trevor McCarthy taking advantage of his opportunities and experiences. And Trevor, we're proud of you. We'll keep watching you and keep it rolling, buddy.
Thanks so much, John.
One of my favorite news segments, In the Room with Sean Clancy. You can hear that every single week, 10 o'clock Eastern, here on the Equine Forum. When I come back, Kurt Becker will take you on a stroll through racing history. Then it's time to open the phone lines and take your calls right here on the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Justify
a four-time Grade 1 winner, Eclipse Champion 3-year-old, Horse of the Year, and the only undefeated Triple Crown winner. By Sire of Sires, Scat Daddy, Justify's first foals sold for up to $600,000 at the recent November sales, while his in-foal mares were led by the three-time Grade 1 winning daughter of Uncle Mo, Bast, who sold for $4.2 million to Spendthrift Farm. Justify has covered over 80 Grade 1 winners or dams of Grade 1 winners in his first 2 years at Ashford. Call the team at Ashford today to book your mare while there are still seasons available. Adina Springs bred and raced the best son of Hall of Famer Ghost Sapper. Champion, multiple Grade 1 winner, and fellow Hall of Famer, Shaman Ghost, who became the first horse in 3 decades to reel off this historic Grade 1 double.
And it's going to be won by Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward!
It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile. Shaman Ghost has beaten Midnight Storm.
Seeing is believing with Shaman Ghost. Learn more at AdinaStallions.com.
Climax Stallions is coming to New York with Mr. Monomoy. At 3, Mr. Monomoy dominated the Grade 2 Risen Star Stakes at Fairgrounds, going wire to wire.
Mr. Monomoy leads them home in the first division of the Risen Star Stakes.
He's also a half-brother to 2-time Breeders' Cup Distaff winner, Monomoy Girl. Mr. Monomoy, standing in New York at Waldorf Farm for $5,000. For more information, visit ClimaxStallions.com.
The Virginia Stallion Auction returns Wednesday, February 10th, with open bidding on every season. The impressive list of quality seasons includes Ghost Sapper, Gunrunner, Liam's Map, Malibu Moon, More Than Ready, Midnight Loot, Union Rags, and many more. Plus seasons to horses who are full or close to full at the farm, such as Complexity, Not This Time, Omaha Beach, and Volatile. No guarantee seasons are a great way to save money on your stud fees. So mark your calendar. The Virginia Stallion Auction, Wednesday, February 10th, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern. Learn more at VABred.org.
Hello, this is Steve Cawthon, winner of the Triple Crown 1978 Aboard Affirmed, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They approach an e-quarter pole and Fun on the Run, still full of run out here. Fun on the Run, kicking on for home. Red is second. Silver Charm now comes to prove the danger down at the rail. Heads are turned for home. Fun on the Run, Red on the outside. Silver Charm catching stride for stride at the rail. And Silver Charm now hitting the front. Fun on the Run trying to battle back. A 16th to go and Silver Charm Freehouse with a late run on the outside. But Silver Charm's done enough to win. Silver Charm wins the San Vicente.
Silver Charm taking the San Vicente in 1997. Welcome back to the Equine Forum. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch with you. Hour three. Rolling on, and that was a big win for Hall of Famer Bob Baffert, and we've said that so many times over the past 40 years or so, it seems like. He has just been unbelievable in everything he's accomplished. That was the first of what would become 10 wins in the San Vicente for Bob, and of course he's back today with a couple more contenders. We'll see if he can do it. He has the field surrounded. Both of his horses look very, very live in that San Vicente later today. But that win by Silver Charm under Chris McCarron for Bob and Beverly Lewis, longtime clients of Bob Baffert, helped him get started. That was a moment that I know that Bob is never going to forget because it catapulted Silver Charm to what would be a Kentucky Derby victory later that season. Well, last week I debuted a new weekly segment and really excited to bring this your way every single Saturday here on the Equine Forum. It's called Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History, and this week Kurt takes you on a stroll and tells you the story of another San Vicente winner that came 6 years prior to Silver Charm.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history. It has been a long time since America got acquainted with the likes of Hansel, Strike the Gold, Fly So Free, Best Pal, and Corporate Report. They were among the leading three-year-olds of 1991, and each would finish his career as a Grade 1 winner with earnings of $1 million or more. But it was a different horse from that crop who would finish the season with the nickname Mr. Derby. He was a handsome colt with a shiny copper-colored coat. His name was Olympio, and he was a homebred racing in the colors of Vern Winchell, the former president and CEO of Denny's Restaurants. Trained by Hall of Famer Ron McAnally, Olympio had shown promise as a juvenile in California, but he had been overshadowed by an up-and-comer named Best Pal. Such was the case when Best Pal won the $1 million Hollywood Futurity while Olympio finished fourth.
With a 16th to go, Best Pal has the better of General Meeting. Rain Road running a mighty race, but Best Pal clear, and Best Pal wins the Futurity. General Meeting is in a photo for second and just gets there from Rain Road, followed by Olympio.
But early in his three-year-old campaign, Olympio began to establish his own identity by avoiding Best Pal and racking up victories. It began in February of 1991 with a win in the San Vicente Stakes at Santa Anita. It continued with a triumph around two turns in the Sausalito Stakes at Golden Gate. And after a victory in the 9-furlong Arkansas Derby in April, everyone agreed that Olympio had earned a shot at the Kentucky Derby. Everyone, that is, except trainer Ron McAnally. Olympio had won in Hot Springs on April 20th that year, and the Run for the Roses was scheduled for May 4th. And McAnally refused to run the colt a mile and a quarter on 2 weeks' rest. Instead, he would point Olympio for the Preakness Stakes on May 18 at a mile and 3/16. Sent off the second betting choice, Olympio made his presence felt early in the race that day in Baltimore.
And they're off in the 116th Preakness. What'd you think? Break a bit outwardly at the start. Olympio, right from the start, asserting himself on the lead.
Olympio fought hard in the Preakness, but he would finish fourth. Kentucky Derby winner Strike the Gold was two spots behind him in sixth, but the winner, by seven lengths that day, was Hansel. Olympio's jockey, Eddie Delahousse, refused to dwell on the loss. Instead, he told the press, quote, "We have the entire year ahead of us," end quote. What a year it would be. Olympio won the Grade II Minnesota Derby in July in stakes and track record time. In August, he won the American Derby in Chicago at 10 furlongs. And in November, he captured a division of the Grade I Hollywood Derby at Hollywood Park on the grass, giving him his fourth Derby triumph of the season. The four Derby wins put him in elite company, including Black Gold, who won four Derbies in 1924, Candy Spots, who did so in 1963, and Snow Chief, who captured four Derby events in 1986. Following a couple of starts early in his four-year-old season, Olympio was retired to stallion duty at Payson Stud in Kentucky. His racing record included 9 wins and 4 seconds in 17 career starts with earnings of $1.4 million. And his record as a sire would include 25 stakes winners from 19 crops. Olympio died in 2011 in California, where he had been at stud for several years after relocating from Kentucky. Today, a small piece of Olympio lives on through reigning Eclipse champion distaffer, Monomoy Girl. The relationship is a distant one, as it actually comes through the maternal family of Tapazar, the sire of Monomoy Girl. But it's there, and it's a reminder that flashy chestnuts from this family still know how to win races.
As they come down to the line, she did it again! Monomoy Girl and Florent Giroux have won the distaff over Valiance.
Unlike Monomoy Girl, Olympio never won a Breeders' Cup race. He was not the most accomplished horse of his crop, nor was he the most famous. But he was good enough to win derbies in 4 states, and that's an accomplishment worth remembering. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
Well, I have to tell you, if you're a fan of horse racing, those segments, last week's story about Holy Bull, this week with Olympio, they are just phenomenal. My thanks to Kurt Becker for putting those together and for his hard work in weaving those stories together. Catch next week's Stroll Through Racing History here on the Equine Forum. It'll roughly be about the same time, I would imagine, maybe a bit earlier, but make sure you're locked into the whole show, 8 to 11 a.m. Eastern, next Saturday for Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History. When I come back, it is time to open up the phone lines, a brand new call-in segment that I'll bring your way every single week to wrap up the program. You get a chance to call in, share your stories on anything in the world of racing. If you want to talk about the prep races this weekend, that's wonderful. If you want to share some stories like so many people have on the late Julio Canani, who passed away yesterday, I welcome those to the program as well. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
The Virginia Stallion Auction returns Wednesday, February 10th, with open bidding on every season. The impressive list of quality seasons includes Ghost Sapper, Gunrunner, Liam's Map, Malibu Moon, More Than Ready, Midnight Loot, Union Rags, and many more. Plus seasons to horses who are full or close to full at the farm, such as Complexity, Not This Time, Omaha Beach, and Volatile. No guarantee seasons are a great way to save money on your stud fees. So mark your calendar. The Virginia Stallion Auction, Wednesday, February 10th, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern. Learn more at VABred.org.
Pit Oak Stud's Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner-up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
From the outside, Dial to Win is there. Second from the inside, Coach Jer's Joy trying to muster another effort with less than an eighth to go. Dial to Win giving this big favorite all she wants. Meanwhile, Lady Traveler is storming home down the center. 16th to go, Zajul calling on all her class, and all her class is enough. She wins by a length and a half.
Zajul overcame a slow start and remained undefeated with a game victory in the Grade 3 Forward Gal last Saturday at Gulfstream Park. That win followed her 7 1/4 length maiden tally, and it makes Zajul your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Street Sense, already the sire of three black type winners in 2021, including undefeated three-year-old filly Zajul, only Into Mischief has more black type winners this year. Learn more about Street Sense and all the Darley Stallions by visiting darleyamerica.com.
Hi, I'm Leah Jarmati, and I love listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Wide open, Linda Hand shortly, safe on the outside. Linda Hand holding on. Linda Hand fully extended to hold off Silic. Here comes Tupa, flying as they come to the finish. And that's on Corky and two on the line. Silic gets it for the stakes.
And unquestionably, the two-year-old filly champion. She wins by five.
Tom Durkin with the call of three Breeders' Cup victories for late trainer Julio Canani. The news coming out yesterday that he passed away in Pasadena, California at the age of 83. And if you would like to call in and share some memories, some stories of Julio Canani, as so many people have done on social media and other outlets over the past 24 hours or so, give me a call, 888-966-4776. That's 888-966-HRRN. And share those stories if you want to talk about the Derby preps. This segment, this new weekly call-in segment, is for you, HRN Nation. And in addition to those three Breeders' Cup wins, so many people will remember Julio Canani for his 1,137 career victories, but maybe even more so for his robust personality. And nobody knows that better than the first caller who was on the line. That is the pontiff of the pick four, Jude Feld, who worked as Julio's assistant as he was starting his career. JT, great to hear your voice, my friend.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, Julio. He was quite the character, kind of a one-of-a-kind human being. And lots of great stories about Julio.
Yeah, I mentioned the robust personality, and you had a chance to be around him, you know, for so much of the early days of Jude Feld, if you will. When I say the name Julio Canani, what are some of the things that immediately come to mind?
Well, when I first met him, it was 1978, and I was working for the Daily Racing Form at Sanita, and Julio was giving the race results in Spanish. It was the only racetrack at the time, I believe, that had a Spanish-speaking program, and that made sense being in California and all that. But we hit it off almost instantaneously, and He was a great guy. So I started going to his barn in the morning, and one morning it was one of those sandy days where it gets down to like 20 degrees. Doesn't happen very often, but it does happen. And I was freezing, and I was bitching about the weather to Julio, and he hands me a horse, and he says, "Here, walk this horse. It'll warm you up." And so I started walking the horse, and little by little, I started doing more and more for him, and then kind of became his assistant, so to speak. He had lots of irons in the fire. He did a lot of different jobs, just trying to, you know, make ends meet and keep food on the table for his kids. And he sold carrots and he did the race results and trained a few horses. In those days, he only had three horses, a $10,000 claimer and two California bred maidens. So there wasn't a lot of action going around, but he was a great trainer, an excellent horseman, a good caretaker, and I learned a lot from him.
There have been so many people that have shared their Julio stories on social media. I've read many of them on Twitter over the past 24 hours or so. And it's so great to see somebody remembered with such positive stories. And every story you hear is about him being supportive of somebody. Chad Brown came out and talked about the fact that Julio was so nice to him when he was working with Bobby Frankel. There are countless stories out there now about Julio and his generosity toward other people.
Yeah, well, that was just his basic nature. I mean, the guy was always in a good mood unless he got a bad ride or didn't cash a bet. But I mean, by and large, his personality, on top of being larger than life, I mean, it was very caring. He did a lot of things behind the scenes for grooms. And, you know, if somebody was down on their luck, he would always help them. He just, he was a really good person and had a great feeling for people and for horses. And so it was hard to catch him on a bad day, really.
What's the story of the giant green hat on St. Patrick's Day that he would often be seen wearing?
Well, he was kind of a character. You know, some of his outfits were a little garish. Simon Bray talked about yesterday about him and his pink shorts. He had this old pair of pink Bermuda shorts that he used to wear all the time with his little bony legs. And you never knew what he was going to wear, but the pink shorts and a plaid shirt were his usual uniform. And then, you know, depending on holidays or whatever, he wore that big green hat for St. Patrick's Day. And he had the Russian fur hat that was legendary. I mean, everybody loved that thing. He wasn't afraid to be who he was. He never worried about what other people were going to think or what they were going to say. He just did what he felt like doing, which is a great quality to have, I think.
Yeah, well, he's definitely going to be missed, and I know you will miss him as somebody who, when we were doing the show together, you would always reference him in a very positive fashion, and he'll definitely be missed. And JT, I really appreciate you spending a few minutes to remember Julio Canani here this morning.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. He was a great guy, and you're right. Everybody that's been on social media has something positive to say about him, and that's a great tribute to a magnificent life.
Yeah, great to hear your voice, brother. I'll talk to you again soon.
All right, take it easy.
All right, Ponte for the pick four. Jude Feld, again, worked as Julio's assistant as he was getting started. Just another way to remember Julio Canani. If you have some thoughts, you want to tell a story, go ahead. You have about 10 minutes here in this new call-in segment. This segment is all about you, HRN Nation. 888-966-4776. That's 888-966-4776. If you have a Julio story you want to tell, I'm open to it. If you want to talk about any of the horses going in the prep races today, those three Derby points races, we can do that. If you want to share your thoughts on a pick, you have a horse you think is going to win, let me know. 888-966-4776, the number to call. And again, this segment will be brought to you every single week as the final segment of the show gives you a chance to weigh in on anything that I've talked about throughout the past couple of hours, 3 hours actually. And again, if you want to reflect on Julio Canani, we can do that too. 888-966-4776. And again, another couple of caps coming your way this week. My wife, much to her chagrin, is probably cringing right now listening that I even said that, but she will be the one mailing you a cap, HRN ball cap, for the first two callers coming up here over the next 10 minutes or so. And let's go back out to the phone lines. Jeff in Louisville is on the line. Jeff, appreciate the call, my friend. What's on your mind?
Hey, guys. How you doing this morning?
Doing well, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm saddened to hear the news, man. Julio was one of my favorite turf trainers. I always said he could get a horse ready for a mile turf race better than anybody in the States, and I always believed that. But I got a quick story to tell.
Go for it.
Back in 2004, Pacific Classic Day at Del Mar, I was a jockey agent in Louisville at the time, and my friend, rest in peace, Steve Elsey, was a jockey agent. He had Rafael Bayerano. He's the one that got him started. Mm-hmm. Bayerano flew out to ride, I forgot the name of the horse, Colonial something in the Pacific Classic, the year that Pat Day rode Perfect Drift out there. Anyway, so Steve Elsey asked me, you know, I said, I'm going to California for the Pacific Classic vacation. He said, well, I'm not going. Make sure the kid gets to the track and get him back to the airport on time. I said, you got it. So I get there. I've never been to California in my life. I get there. I walk in the track. Lo and behold, I've never seen Julio before. I knew him from seeing him on TV, whatever. But as soon as I walk in the track, he's the first person I see. I walk straight up to him and begin to tell him that me and all my buddies back in Louisville think that you're the best turf trainer, you know, in the country. And he looks at me like I'm trying to pull his leg or something, you know, kind of turns his head sideways and looks at me like, okay, what's the joke here? I said, no, I'm serious, Julio. We're really big fans of yours, blah, blah, blah. I said, you mind signing my program, signing an autograph? He didn't say a word. He just reached out and grabbed my program. He flipped over to a third or fourth race, whatever it was, where one of his horses was running, and he autographed that horse. So I took that as, well, maybe he's telling me to bet him. I can't remember the name of the horse, but he had ran second six times in a row to the same horse. Julio's horse ran second six races in a row to the same winner. Sure enough, the horse beat him that day. Julio's coming back out of the winner's circle. I pointed my finger at him, kind of shook my finger. I told you so. I told you so. And he just smiled with that Julio smile. It was an unbelievable day. It really was. It's the only time I ever met the man, and hearing all everybody else's stories got me thinking. I'm just a common race fan, and I got a Julio story. I thought I'd call in and share it.
Yeah, that's fantastic, that's my Julio Jeff. Story. You know, there's so many of those out there, and I love that story. That's fantastic. I think the name of the horse you were looking for with Rafael was Colonial Colony when he went out to the Pacific Classic back in 2004. With Rafael Bejarano. But what a great story, and really appreciate you taking the time to call in, Jeff. Thanks for sharing that.
Yes, sir. You all have a great day.
Yeah, you too. And if you want to give my producer your email address, we'll get in touch and we'll send you an HRN ball cap. Jeff in Louisville, appreciate that. 888-966-4776, the number to call. Go ahead and if you want to chime in with a Julio story, and remember the man who passed away yesterday at the age of 83, or if you want to talk about any of the prep races coming up this weekend or the three-year-old picture in general, maybe look back on what we saw last weekend in the Holy Bull and some of the big races. You can do that with me here. We've got, about 6 or 7 minutes left. 888-966-4776. And, you know, this segment is something I've wanted to do for a very long time. Back when I first started with the Equine Forum, and I was doing it with my late mentor, Pete Kulis, every once in a while we would be able to take phone calls, and we did it more frequently back then, and it's something I've always missed over the past 10 years or so. So now I get a chance to expand the show and create this new segment for you and give you the chance to call in every week and let you share your experiences and your love of the sport of thoroughbred racing and you know, anything you want to talk about. Give me a call, 888-966-4776. Again, next caller, if you give my producer your email address, we will get in touch with you and we will send you an HRN ball cap just for calling into the show here this morning. But make sure you mark this on your calendar for every Saturday morning and be part of this particular segment. Yeah, fantastic story there. And you know, the fact that, you know, Julio just reaching out and signing the autograph and signing it on that horse and those types of things are some of the things. And I will admit, I did not have the opportunity to get to know Julio Canani over the years. I just didn't. I never had much interaction with him. But to read the stories that people have been posting out there on social media has been really heartwarming and great to see those kinds of remembrances for somebody who did a lot to help this sport and was so prominent in racing, certainly on a national level, but in California as well. 888-966-4776. If you are as surprised as I am that no horse has ever come from the Withers, which will be run at Aqueduct today, or the Sam F. Davis at Tampa Bay Downs and gone on to win the Kentucky Derby, give me a call, because that one, that shocked me. I didn't see that one coming, especially with the Withers. You would think at some point one of those outstanding horses that ran in the Withers would have gone on to win the Kentucky Derby. Didn't happen. On the flip side of that, the San Vicente has had 10 horses go on and win the Kentucky Derby. Seven of those have won both. If you already have your Derby horse picked out, give me a call and let me know. We're down to about the final 3 minutes in this segment. I have time for one more phone call, 888-966-4776. Again, this is your chance to call in and talk about anything racing. If you want to share your Derby horse with me, give me a call right now and let me know. The San Vicente, you look at the horses that have come from there, and I mentioned that Bob Baffert has won that race a record 10 times. Only once has one of his horses that won the San Vicente gone on to win the Kentucky Derby later that year, and that was Silver Charm, his first one, in 97. Prior to that, of course, he had Nyquist in 2016, Silver Charm in 97. Prior to that, it was Bold Forbes in 76 for Laz Barrera, Majestic Prince for trainer, then Johnny Longden in 1969, Lucky Debonair in 65, Tommy Lee in 59, Swaps, Determine, Hal Gale, and Galahadian, I believe is how you pronounce that name. I hope that's right, in 1940. Skip is in Fargo. Skip, appreciate the phone call, my friend.
Hey, Mike, how are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I love the third hour. I've called it the power hour of the HRRN.
I'm going to steal that from you. I like that.
Sounds great. Mike, I don't know if you remember, you spoke in my livestock sales and marketing class at North Dakota State University a year ago.
I absolutely remember that. I would never forget.
Awesome. Well, hey, I'm just talking Derby horses, and I'm still on the essential quality train. But one that also sparked my interest was the Great One, trained by Doug O'Neill. And he didn't talk about him the other day when you visited with him, and just wanted to get your thoughts on the Great One being a son of Nyquist.
Yeah, you're right. And it's funny, because after I finished that interview with Doug, we were running out of time, and I was kicking myself after the show for not asking him about that particular horse, because even though he only has the one win to his credit, it was an impressive win, breaking his maiden last time out. But Skip, you got to figure that that Doug kind of was pretty high on this horse, because as a maiden, after being beaten in his first three starts, he threw him into the deep end in the Grade 2 Low Sal Futurity, where he finished second that day. That was a really good effort, beaten by Spielberg. So you have to think that they're pretty high on this horse, and the Nyquist connection, you know, being a horse that Doug won the Kentucky Derby with, that all adds to it too. But yeah, I think that they have to be high on this horse, considering the way that they handled him through his first four starts.
Yeah, I would agree. And thanks for having me, Mike. Love the show.
Yeah, Skip, appreciate the call, and look forward to hearing from you again. Again, this segment is for you, HRN Nation. I will do it every single Saturday toward the end of the program now. I will open up the phone lines and make sure you start penciling that in to give me a call every week and talk some racing. All right, that's all the time we have for this segment today. Going to get to one final break. I'll come back and wrap up the show and tell you where you can hear some of the segments that we played if you missed them. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Gainsway Stallion Caraconti is off to a strong start at stud. A leading sire amongst his crop by percentage of stakes horses, top runners by Caraconti include graded stakes winners Kenzai Warrior.
But Kenzai Warrior is sticking his head down and getting up. Kenzai Warrior wins the Horace Hill.
Sole Volante.
On the outside, Sole Volante runs by the leader. It's Sole Volante in front and going away.
Two-year-old stakes winner Spanish Love Affair.
16th to go, Spanish Love Affair almost home. Spanish Love Affair lives up to the hype and wins it 1-2.
And dual surface dynamo, Princess Grace.
16th to go, Princess Grace still in front. Pasta Plate is trying hard, but she's second to Princess Grace, streaking under the wire, the three-length winner.
A rising star with greatest stakes winners on both dirt and turf, Caraconti, standing at Gainsway.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Racing fans, with the possibility of a $5 million pool, there is a mandatory payout in Saturday's 20-cent Rainbow Pick 6 jackpot at Santa Anita. That's right, today's total Rainbow Pick 6 jackpot could approach $5 million, and there will be a mandatory payout. Saturday's Rainbow 6 is comprised of races 5 through 10, with average field size at 10 horses per race. Approximate post time for race 5 on Saturday is at 2:08 Pacific. Don't forget, you can watch and wager at First Bet. That's First.com/bet, and please note, we will have special early first post times on both Saturday and Sunday. First post time on Saturday is at 12 noon with four graded stakes included. On Big Game Sunday, first post time for an 8-race card is at 11 a.m. Track announcer Frank Miramati and Tom Quigley will handicap Saturday's card beginning at 10:50, and on Big Game Sunday, their handicapping seminar begins at 9:50 a.m. at SantaAnita.com.
HRRN is live online. Go to our website at horseracingradio.net to stream all of our broadcasts live or listen to the show archives anytime. Read our blogs, get the latest news, and see our entire broadcast schedule. It's all there at horseracingradio.net. And follow us on Twitter at HRRN and like our page on Facebook. Search Apple Podcasts for HRRN and download our latest shows. HRRN is home to racing's biggest events, and our home on the web is at horseracingradio.net.
Hello, I'm Junior Alvarado, and I listen to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Well, remember to check out the February 6th issue of Blood Horse Magazine and Tablet. It's another cover-to-cover read that includes features such as Authentic, winning the 2020 Eclipse Award for Horse of the Year and three-year-old male. That's by Frank Angst. The 2020 Eclipse Awards recap, a closer look at each of the winners of the Eclipse Awards and a virtual awards program. And then the regional section, which is From the Ground Up with Blazing Meadows, horseman Tim Hamm, enjoying success in Ohio and beyond. That is by Meredith Doherty. So make sure you check out the Blood Horse this week, February 6th. Of course, Byron King's Derby Dozen. You heard from Byron earlier in the program walking through his top 12 contenders for this year's Kentucky Derby, at least as we sit here on February 6th. Download a copy of the issue now from the Blood Horse Magazine app via the App Store or Google Play, or subscribe at bloodhorse.com/subscribe. Well, been a fun show. Again, this show now 3 hours every single solitary week. I like Skip's suggestion of the final hour being the power hour of the Equine Forum. It certainly was loaded for you here today. And make plans to call in and talk with me in that final segment of the show every single Saturday morning. I know it's going to take people a little bit of time to get used to that because we haven't done it in so long. But it'll be a feature every week here on the program, and I look forward to talking racing with the HRN Nation. My thanks to all of the guests who helped make this possible. It kicked off with Debbie Easter, the executive director of the Virginia Thoroughbred Association, talking about their upcoming stallion auction. Owner Saul Kuhman was with me in the first hour of the program. Byron King kicked off hour two. And trainer Ken Weinbaugh Fantastic story there. He joined me about 9:25 Eastern to talk about Florida-bred Boca Boy going in today's Sam F. Davis Stakes at Tampa Bay Downs. Of course, all our special features. My thanks to Trevor McCarthy for joining Sean Clancy in our In the Room segment, for Kurt Becker, who put together the stroll through racing history this week. And, of course, our industry star of the week, presented by Stuart Morris, was Fausto Gutierrez this week. And my thanks to him. And one more, Junior McFarlane, who was this week's unsung hero, presented by Claiborne. If you missed that, the podcast will be up on our website, as will the podcast of this entire show and our In the Room segment with Sean Clancy. Head over to horseracingradio.net to check it out. Poll question is finished. Well, still going on, actually. You can weigh in. Which jockey, the greatest of all time? A lot of votes. Lafitte Pinkai Jr. getting a lot of love in here. Angel Cordero, as I mentioned, Johnny V with some respect. Steve Cawthon, Sandy Hawley. Gary Stevens getting a shout-out, too. Jorge Chavez, pretty cool stuff. My thanks to everybody who took time to weigh in on the poll question this morning. A special thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studios, and to Chauncey for handling all that social media. I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to the Equine Forum here on HRRN. Super Bowl weekend. We're not there this year. We will be next year. Go Steelers.